Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the inauguration of Barack Obama on WNYC. New Yorkers are ready.
While I did not vote for you, Mr. Obama, I wish you the very best of luck. Therefore, please either make your speech short or wear a hat and a scarf. Thank you. Bye.
Certainly, this is an historic day for America, but it will be a truly great day for this country when a non-Caucasian is elected president and nobody notices.
Hi, my name is Marilyn Katz from Westchester County, and I am finally glad to be unemployed because now I can spend Tuesday watching the inauguration. Thank you.
Hi, this is Tom from Queens. Regards to the inauguration of Mr. Obama, just another day of the week, go to work. No other president has been noted of any note. And he's just another man that became president. I wish him well. I wish the country well. And thank you. Bye.
Hi, this is Ellen from Fairfield, Connecticut. I just have one word of warning for President-elect Barack Obama. Don't get too close to Oprah. Just would really hate to see you end up on Entertainment Tonight. She can suck people in and, hey, look at what happened to Tom Cruise after he jumped on her couch. Anyway, Barack, good luck. You're going to be a great president. And happy inauguration.
I think spending $40 million on the inauguration is a total waste of money in this particular environment. I think the idea that this is some kind of a political change, it's not. It's an abomination and should have been stopped. Absolutely should have been stopped. Thank you.
Hello, Mr. President. I'm a white, middle-class American, an immigrant, and growing up in Italy, we always had a picture of Martin Luther King and JFK on our walls. And I never realized the importance of these two men until I immigrated to the U.S. I know you will succeed in everything you set out to do, but if you don't, it's still the greatest moment in American history. And I just want you to know, God will bless you and your family. Good luck, my friend.
Beautiful expression at the end there, but never mind the banking crisis, Afghanistan, little things like that. Don't get too close to Oprah. WNYC listeners who called our pre-inauguration hotline, and now the day is here. In less than 3 hours, Barack Obama will be President of the United States. Good morning, everyone. Brian Lehrer with you an hour early on WNYC today to begin our special inauguration coverage. There is so much to say, and yet almost no way to say it. I've been talking to writers and linguists and historians all week, and they tell me that even they don't have the words for today, but they certainly have the emotion, and we will have each other to hang out with on the way to the official swearing-in later this morning. Right now we have Todd Zwillick of Capital News Connection with us live from D.C. You can hear how noisy it is there. Hi, Todd. Where are you exactly, and what's the scene?
Hi, Brian. Well, I'm on the west front of the Capitol, just about 35 yards from the podium where Barack Obama will give his speech. I'm on the media riser, watching the crowds fill in. You can probably hear some music behind me blaring through the loudspeakers, some warm-up music. You can probably also hear the helicopters overhead, and that means security is tightening, of course. It's been tight the whole time, but as the clock ticks down, the security screws tighten as well. You can probably hear sirens down Pennsylvania Avenue behind me. The Marine Corps band up front isn't here yet, but there are a couple of people trickling in. Looks like one guy's tuning his bass drum.
Todd, the expectations for the crowd size have almost been as out of control as expectations for the speech. Any way to estimate the number of visitors?
Well, no, there isn't, and we might have to wait for some kind of final count after. What I can offer you, Brian, is a visual, and if you hear me straining, it's because I'm leaning over my riser, looking off to my right. The sun has risen over the rotunda, and the sun is drenching the mall, and I can see all the way to Virginia, which means I can see all the way back to the Lincoln Memorial from the steps of the Capitol, and as far as I can tell from here, it's a sea of people. Now, they've said that if the mall is full, that's about 2.2 million people, but I don't think the mall's ever been full before. So I think that that's a guesstimate in the true sense of the word. We'll have to wait for estimates afterward. Now, just a word of note, the National Park Service used to do estimates of crowd sizes on the mall. They no longer do them. That dates back to the Million Man March. Mm-hmm. About 8 or 10 years ago, if you remember, 8 years ago, I guess, there were crowd estimates made at the time, and those estimates became controversial, primarily because it was called the Million Man March, and they expected a million, and I'm not sure they got it. The Park Service, after that controversy, decided not to make estimates anymore, so they won't be making one. Whoever makes one, they'll be unofficial, maybe from satellite images or helicopter images.
How about the demographic makeup? I heard Andrea Bernstein say early this morning on the Takeaway around 6 o'clock that the people coming down that early, at least, were largely African-American.
Well, the people on my commute this morning, although it was early, there were lots and lots of people on the street, a combination of commuters down to the mall and people coming out of celebrations last night. Clubs and restaurants are staying open late this week in Washington. Washington is an African-American city, by and large. However, in the northwest part of the city, as you commute through, there's no doubt that there are lots and lots of visitors from out of town, and people walking down around the mall, there are a lot of African-American faces, no doubt about it. Now, the last 2 days, as I was circulating around Capitol Hill, getting set up for this event and talking to people, you see a lot of African-American families, a lot of people with children. I talked to several families of grandparents, parents, and little children who'd all made the trip from all over the country together to come and see the inaugural. Now, I also ran into white families and families of all races. As a matter of fact, you see them all, but there is no question that this event is a big draw for African-American families. There are a lot of smiles. There are a lot of very, very proud people today.
Todd, you're not just a tourist there for this. You cover D.C. all the time. How's the Washington political establishment reacting to all this? Are they more cynical in a been there, done that kind of way if they've seen other inaugurations?
Well, not right now. The Washington political establishment is nothing if not pragmatic, of course. So if they're optimistic, let's not say that they're too emotional, but they're nothing but pragmatic. And this moment belongs to Barack Obama, his large electoral margin, and the moment that he brings after 8 years of the Bush presidency, which has not ended well, by the measure of the polls, and the expectation that Barack Obama, his electoral mandate, and his rise to power brings. The political establishment wants to be part of it. Around Capitol Hill, you're noticing, while the Republicans in the minority are trying not to roll over and show their bellies, as it were, on issues that have already come up, like the stimulus, which is being debated right now, and they'll be back to business on that tomorrow as soon as all this is finished. There is an air of respectfulness. Barack Obama, as you've probably heard, is trying to set an air of bipartisanship, and it's up to Republicans to respond to that. Nobody wants to seem like they're against the moment. And let's take them at their word. We've had 8 years of one party and one president in power. There's a new party and a new president in power, and regardless of who that is, it's an opportunity to do things differently. We've heard that before, of course. No one will be surprised if things slide back to partisanship. You can probably hear the security helicopter going straight overhead now. Nobody will be surprised if things slide back into partisanship, and they probably will, but maybe Barack Obama's goal is to prevent them from sliding quite so far back into bickering and rancor, and maybe have a respectful opposition and respectful political battles.
And we'll see if Barack Obama can navigate those choppy waters better than some of his predecessors, or approach policy in a more bipartisan way than some of his, than his immediate predecessor, let's say, and whether that actually matters. I know he got very little Republican support already for the version of the TARP II bill that he supported, but let's hold all that for a moment after today. I think this is a unique moment where we actually put a lot of that stuff aside. I do want to ask one George Bush going out the door question, though. This is his last day. He is the president until just before noon. Were there any midnight pardons or executive orders while most of us were sleeping?
There was not quite a pair of midnight commutations, not pardons. I don't know, Brian, if you remember the story of the two border agents in Texas who had gone to jail pursuant to a shooting incident with with an illegal immigrant, a drug dealer, I believe, from Mexico. There was a shooting incident. I believe the man was fleeing and was shot dead by two border agents.
Right.
They were jailed.
Right.
Their case became a cause celeb for immigration reform advocates, thinking these gentlemen were jailed unfairly. Last night, the president commuted their sentences. They were not pardoned. They're still, they were found guilty of their crimes, and they will remain so. But in about 2 months, they're serving 10 years, and in about 2 months, they should be getting out of jail. It's worth noting that the one pardon that everyone, talk about cynicism, the one pardon that everyone was expecting was Scooter Libby. He had his sentence commuted, of course, and everyone was expecting the president to pardon this very close ally, dating back to the CIA leak case with Karl Rove in the White House. And remember Judith Miller from the New York Times, who spent time in jail for refusing to disclose her sources. Everyone thought that Scooter Libby would be pardoned in that case. He hasn't been, at least not yet. Now, there are about 3 hours left until President Bush is no longer president, so I suppose he still has an opportunity. But so far, I think the rest of the morning is pretty busy. I'm not sure if he's signing any more pardon papers.
Well, that would be pretty unprecedented to do it at this late hour, especially if they are preemptive pardons of members of his own administration, as some people were anticipating and fearing and lobbying against. So I think we can safely say now that it looks like that will not happen. Todd Zwillick from Capital News Connection, there 35 yards from where President Obama will be sworn in. We'll check back with you later in the morning. Thanks a lot for starting us off.
Great. Talk to you then.
And WNYC reporter Beth Fertig is a little closer to home at the Harlem Armory to watch the inauguration with some school children there on West 142nd Street in Manhattan. Hiya, Beth.
Hi, Brian. I'm here with the Democracy Prep Charter School, rented out the armory so that their students and students from about 40 other schools are going to come here to watch the inauguration on big screens, three big screens that they've set up. And they have a whole room full of round tables with red, white, and blue tablecloths and confetti, and the students are just starting to trickle in now. But I wanted to put you on with a couple of the students who organized this from the Inauguration Committee at Democracy Prep.
Great.
We have a few sixth graders who are all 11 years old. This is Amina Nayef, and she was here getting ready pretty early this morning. Here you go, Amina.
Hi, Amina. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Amina, it's Brian Lehrer on WNYC Radio. So tell us about this event you're organizing.
We're organizing a big party where not millions, but 40 different schools could come to. And it's like almost a party for all of Harlem.
All right. 40 different schools. You're going to have grades K through 12, or is it mostly sixth graders like you?
I think it's mostly sixth and seventh and eighth graders.
And what was it like trying to organize an event for this many kids?
At first, it was pretty hard because we had to think of ideas, and some of it we couldn't pay for, and we just had to think of something that everybody could do, and when we finally thought of it, it kind of became easy.
So is anybody going to speak there, or is everybody just going to gather around and get ready to watch the inauguration on television?
We're going to have some entertainment, and I think people are going to speak.
Yeah. How do you feel today?
I feel pretty excited today because we have worked on this for 2 months, and now it could finally come to reality.
How do you feel about Barack Obama becoming president?
I feel it's like different feelings about Barack Obama becoming president because I don't know if I could trust him yet because, you know, he's not president yet. And when he finally does something, I hope he does something really, really good because, you know, I want him to change the world because we had a really bad 4 years.
Just in sixth grade and you're already a skeptic. You're going to hold your praise until he actually does something. Is that it?
Yes.
All right. Well, that is a fitting attitude for somebody going to a democracy charter school. Amina, good luck. Congratulations on organizing this. I hope you have a great time this morning. And can I talk to Beth Fertig again?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, Beth, she's great.
Yeah, the students are very active citizens. They're encouraged to do that at this charter school. And a few of them went to Washington, D.C. last week, including Amina, who you just spoke to. They were part of this committee that, because they couldn't go to Washington for the inauguration, they decided to go a few days in advance, and they made a video, which they're going to present. There's also students from the Children's Storefront School in Harlem. A gospel choir is going to play. The Truman Marching Band from Truman High School in the Bronx is here. But we have another student I'd like to talk to you. This is Anaya Du, who is also on the inauguration committee.
Hey, Anaya. It's Brian Lehrer on WNYC Radio. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks for talking to us. What grade are you in?
I'm in sixth grade.
Also sixth grade. And you're organizing the event along with Amina?
Yes. Yes.
Tell me something about your school. Why is it called Democracy Prep?
I think it's called Democracy Prep because in most of our classes, we study democracy and how it is important to us and what we do.
And this is a prime example today, I guess, huh?
Yes.
Are you excited about Barack Obama becoming president?
Yes, I'm very excited. I have mixed feelings.
Mixed feelings in what way?
I feel nervous, but then I feel excited.
What are you nervous about?
I'm nervous that something will go wrong. Just being prepared if something goes wrong, because it has happened in history before.
Some terrible things have gone wrong, or some things have gone wrong terribly.
Yes.
And what are you excited about?
I'm excited that he has two kids and that they'll be able to know what it feels like to be the first black kids to go in the White House and live there for 4 years.
Do you think that the fact that Barack Obama is being sworn in today as the first African-American president, that that has an effect on your fellow kids at that school, on the way that they set their sights high? Or maybe kids who go to Democracy Prep are already setting your sights as high as possible. But do you think this has an impact on how you and your friends are thinking about your futures?
Yes.
How so?
I think that it's going to have an effect on our fellow futures, because Barack Obama, what he has said in some of his speeches, he has said that he's going to make change, and just making change to our world and fixing the broken pieces to our nation is what I would like to do.
Good luck. It sounds like you're off to a great start. And thank your friend Amina for me, okay?
Okay. And my friend Kevin Lassiter. Would you like to speak to my friend Kevin Lassiter?
You know, we're out of time, so I think we're going to leave it at you and Amina for now. So maybe later in the day we'll be able to speak to Kevin. But also thank Beth Fertig for me, okay?
Okay.
Enjoy the inauguration, Anaya.
Thank you.
It's the inauguration of Barack Obama on WNYC. More in a minute.
WNYC is supported by Holy Name Hospital's Spirit of Women in Teaneck, New Jersey, a female-focused wellness program with free health screenings, special events, and more. More information at 877-HOLY-NAME. Roundabout Theater Company, presenting Hedda Gabler on Broadway, starring Mary Louise Parker. Limited engagement. Tickets at 212-719-1300 or roundabouttheater.org. Symphony Space, presenting a selected shorts evening of scary stories for a winter night with Joyce Carol Oates, live tomorrow at 7 p.m. Tickets at symphonyspace.org.
Yes, Detective, I'd like to report a crime.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, it's not actually a crime.
How's that, ma'am?
Well, supporting WNYC Radio has become so easy, it's almost criminal.
Well, how do you figure that?
It's the WNYC Sustainer Program.
Go on.
Membership contributions are charged each month to your credit card.
Let's go over a couple of points here.
No need. Just go to WNYC.org and click on support.
Yes, ma'am. All right, we'll do that. Thank you very much for calling.
Hello. My husband and I have a brownstone in the East Village, and we will be putting bunting all over the front of our house and large pictures of Barack Obama. This is Barrett Cobb. Thank you.
And from the East Village to the Middle East, Joining us now, Farnaz Fasihi, Wall Street Journal Deputy Bureau Chief for the Middle East and Africa, based in Beirut. Farnaz, welcome back to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Hi from Beirut, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Do people care about this inauguration in Beirut?
They do, but it's tempered. I think there was a lot more excitement about Obama's election in November when he was actually elected. You know, the past couple of weeks, people in the Middle East have really been, watching what's been happening in Gaza and the crisis between Hamas and Israel. And so the excitement is tempered.
Are there factions or populations that are more excited about Obama than others?
I think, sure, I think there are probably a little bit more moderate, more pro-Western factions here in Lebanon and in general in the Middle East are probably more excited about today's events than others. But in general, there is a sense of excitement about this election, a sense that there may be change in the U.S.'s policy toward the Middle East. And perhaps after 8 years of neglect by the Bush administration, the peace process between the Palestinians and Israelis will go back on track.
Are they thinking primarily about the Israeli-Palestinian situation in Beirut? President Bush would probably say that over his 8 years, he championed democracy in Lebanon as one of his most central causes once the Iraq War started.
Well, I think that that is not correct because it's true that Syria left its occupation of Lebanon and left largely because of President Bush, but the war between Hezbollah and Israel in 2006 left the Shia political group much stronger. You know, you have Iran and Syria's political influence has increased in Lebanon, and America's and the political factions that are aligned with the U.S. and the West have gotten weaker. You know, in the past couple of months, we've seen Hezbollah gain a veto power in the government in Lebanon, which is unprecedented, and their elections coming up in June, which Hezbollah and the parties that are aligned with it are standing to gain perhaps the majority in the parliament.
How much of an impact has the Gaza war and now the early stage of the ceasefire had in Lebanon? Is it something they're just watching across the border and feel distressed about, or does it have a direct effect on the country?
It doesn't have a direct effect, although when rockets were, exchanged between southern Lebanon and Israel, there was a bit of anxiety about whether Lebanon would get involved in the fighting. But, you know, the Palestinian issue is a very sensitive one for the Arabs. And, you know, it's every couple of years there's a conflict. And so watching these heart-wrenching pictures of children and women and civilians getting killed and houses being demolished has been very upsetting for them. And it's interesting because in today's headlines, the newspapers today, all the headlines were about the peace process in Gaza, the Arab summit, and the Middle East crisis, and the third or fourth item was President Obama's inauguration, whereas when he was elected in office, it was the front page of every newspaper, local and pan-Arab.
Will there be a lot of people gathering in public places to watch the inauguration on television or even privately in their homes, or not so much?
Not so much. There, I know of one event that's being organized at a bar in Beirut by Democrats abroad, and there are a lot of Lebanese Americans and a lot of Americans and expats who are going. But interestingly, they'll be collecting donations for the Red Cross in Gaza. So even the one public event where screens are going to be set up and it's specifically linked to the inauguration does have a link to Gaza.
Farnaz Fasihi, Wall Street Journal Deputy Bureau Chief for the Middle East and Africa, based in Beirut. Thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks so much, Brian. Bye-bye.
It's the inauguration of Barack Obama on WNYC. Good morning. I'm Brian Lehrer, and we're going to check in now with a red state. Texas, of course, usually leans Republican, and they're not only getting a president today that most of them didn't vote for, but they're getting a former president back as a permanent resident. Though it turns out President Bush actually spent almost 2 years of his presidency in the state of Texas there in Crawford. So joining me now is senior reporter for KUT Public Radio in the Capitol, Austin, Ben Philpott. Ben, welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning.
And you just did a piece on the return of President Bush back to Texas, which will actually happen later today. He's coming back to a state that, for the most part, still loves him, despite really low approval ratings nationally, would you say?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think that there are, he's moving into a neighborhood in the Dallas area where the neighborhood's populated with, friends of his, lifelong friends of his. He's obviously going to be spending some time back at the ranch. Mrs. Bush has lots of friends also in the Dallas area. She went to SMU. So he's moving into a comfortable part of the state for him. Now, having said that, there are members in the Republican Party here in Texas that are disappointed with how his presidency turned out. They don't feel that he was as fiscally conservative as they would have liked for him to have been, and a few other things. And they hope that, whatever new Republican leadership comes during the Obama administration, they will adhere a little more closely to that than what their own president did.
You know, New York is gaga today over this inauguration. What's it like in red state Texas? I realize Austin, the capital, is a little more Democratic leaning than many other parts of the state. But what's it like?
Well, you're right. I mean, on Austin, we had our own parades in the streets, little impromptu parades, just like you did in, Georgetown and in New York City and other parts, other more liberal-leaning parts of the country. But, the state is taking it in stride mostly. I cover the legislature for the station. Being there among the Republican-dominated House and Senate of Texas, they are, they're more interested in what's going to happen here in Texas than focusing on the national story right now. About the only way you can get them to talk about D.C. is when you're talking about what the stimulus money might be coming back from Washington down to Texas. They're not, per se ignoring, but they are just going on with the rest of their day.
They closed down the state legislature for a full week for both of President Bush's inaugurations, didn't they?
They did, and they've closed it down for a full week, or almost a full week this time as well. The state legislature is not in session today. It will not be tomorrow. The Texas House comes back briefly on Thursday. The Senate doesn't come back until next week. So they're offering equal time, I guess you'd say.
So there's at least that level of respect. There must be a lot of Texans, though, who are not at all hopeful about the Obama presidency and who already disagree with his whole point of view on lots of things and the decisions that he's made already with respect to the economy. How much of that would you say there is?
Well, that's a difficult question. I think that there, obviously, within any state and within any party, there are people on the far, either left or right of the party, far right in the Republicans' case, who absolutely are hoping that this is a failure. The Obama administration is a failure, and it gets their own party's beliefs back in line. There are other Republicans that I've talked to who feel like the Obama administration is a good thing, not to become a failure, but to show where Republicans need to refocus their efforts so that they can have an opportunity to retake the White House. And even in Texas, where it's a Republican majority, it is a red state, a statewide candidate, a Democratic candidate can't get more than about 44% of the vote, no matter how popular or how much money they have. The Republicans here still feel like they need to refocus and retrain themselves and pick their right issues and go after the right things. They feel like they've strayed some, and they're hoping that the Obama administration will help focus them.
Do you think there'll be public gatherings in Austin today? Like, there are thousands of people gathering in New York City Hall today. We just heard about a school in Harlem where thousands of students are going to gather to watch this on televisions. Are there going to be scenes like that around the red state of Texas today?
There will be. There absolutely will be. We had one of our other reporters just did a story with a group of African-American 30-somethings who went out and, they each bought fancy dresses, not to go to D.C., but they bought fancy dresses to hang out with their friends and watch the inauguration here in Austin. There are going to be plenty of people watching, marking the day with their own little celebrations. And, Austin's one of the places where there were spontaneous celebrations in the middle of the streets on election night for Obama's victory. So this is you're going to, even in a red state, you're going to get a very blue feel in Austin today.
Ben Philpott, senior reporter for KUT Public Radio in Austin, Texas. Thanks a lot for joining us on this inauguration day.
Thank you.
And it is the inauguration of Barack Obama on WNYC.
Del Toro, Obama's mother,
I would have been 18 the year he was born. Like Madeline Dunham, his grandmother, I have grandchildren who are biracial, African-American, and white. On Inauguration Day, I will feel a vicarious, bittersweet swell, maternal pride on their behalf. My name is Hillary Salk.
That New York mom, with her sense of maternal pride, grand maternal pride, too, she called our pre-inauguration line. And Jabari Asim is with us, previously known for his book, The N-Word. His new book is What Obama Means for Our Culture, Our Politics, Our Future. What Obama Means. Jabari, thanks so much for coming in on this historic day. It's great to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
At the end of your book, you put your finger on something about Obama that seems very relevant to his inaugural theme. You write that he suggests a new kind of patriotism in which a desire to improve oneself becomes inseparable from contributing to the country's revival. It's the merging of American individualism with something more communitarian, I guess. And we hear that he's going to emphasize responsibility in this inaugural address today. So you spotted that part of him from at least months ago when you were writing the book.
Well, there always seemed to be this element of public service that he was talking about early on. And sometimes it was overwhelmed by the sheer charisma of Obama himself. Sometimes we tended to even complain that there were too many platitudes and not enough specifics. But underneath it all, he always seemed to be pointing to a few nuts and bolts things in terms of how we can progress as a nation and how that really can't help happen unless we progress as individuals.
Our whole country's history has been dotted with the balance between self and community. Don't you think that the national effort in World War II, obviously a community effort. De Tocqueville wrote about America's individualism and strong community ties as early as the 1830s.
Right, and I think also we have to mention Ralph Waldo Emerson in that context as sort of the high priest of individualism and how important it is to the American identity. And the tension has always existed between how to successfully marry these strong individual impulses we have with what we need to do collectively as a nation.
What do you think about this theme of responsibility? It could be seen as preachy and chastising if the implication is you people haven't been responsible.
Right. There is that danger. And you know, Obama has very successfully walked that fine line so far between irritating us by being overly pedantic and instead appearing to embody what it is he advocates. So it is a fine line, and that'll be something. How he balances that will be one of the most interesting things to watch in the coming years.
And, you know, people always think it's someone else who hasn't been responsible. It's been a racial code, I think you'd agree, where many whites think inequality persists because of lack of personal responsibility among blacks. They invoke Bill Cosby. People who don't like the Bush tax cuts say the rich haven't been asked to take personal responsibility for their fair share of the burdens, especially after 9/11. So is the whole notion of responsibility in America kind of a Rorschach test?
And in many respects, I mean, I think you're right. When as soon as responsibility is invoked, we tend to point to the person next to us instead of looking in the mirror. So, but I think that the way Obama is positing this whole notion so far will at least encourage us to begin with ourselves before we go outside and start pointing fingers at others.
Jabari Asim with us. His brand new book, released today officially, What Obama Means for Our Culture, Our Politics, Our Future. No coincidence, I assume, that this is the release date of your book.
Well, we did work very hard to come out today, and we're happy that we made it.
And I did note that the election of Barack Obama was included at the beginning of your book. So this is something of an insta-book by publishing standards.
Well, you know, we wrote it with the idea that certain influences that Obama would have upon the culture would take place whether he won or not. But we left room. I turned in the manuscript, and then we left room for an epilogue based on his victory.
Whether he won or not?
Yes.
How so?
Well, I mean, particularly in the African-American community, the conversations that he has started about responsibility, about the proper attitude towards history, you know, in that respect, he's part of a group of African-American politicians, and he's the most prominent one. So that was how I was prepared to position it, that he, if he hadn't won, he was still a sign of things to come in terms of African-American leadership.
Were you at the Democratic Convention?
I was not.
I was there and in the stadium when Obama gave his acceptance speech. And I don't know how much this came across on television, but the lines that probably got the biggest applause, and realize these are Democratic Party faithful, large minority of African-Americans among them, was when he was saying, parents, turn off the televisions, and that whole litany of phrases that he spoke around that. But the crowd went wild. I mean, more than undo the Bush tax cuts, get us out of Iraq, parents, turn off your televisions. Wow.
Yeah, and you know, I think that was significant because some of the more conservative critics of Obama, Shelby Steele, for example, say that there's no way Obama can retain the allegiance of African Americans if he becomes critical of certain of their own behaviors, when in fact the opposite proved to be true. The more he talked about the corrections we need to make within African American communities, the more he resonated in those communities.
What Obama means, and Obama means so many things to so many people. Let me ask about your generational take, which I thought was a very interesting part of the book. Do you see Obama as a post-culture wars president?
I do, and I think that we tend to exaggerate the culture wars. I mean, I look at developments in advertising and popular culture, which suggests that we really pay more attention to that than perhaps we should. But there is a significant generational shift going on in terms of our viewpoints toward race. I call them racial neuroses, and they exist on both sides of the racial divide. But what we're seeing in our children, I'm a year younger than Obama, so I'm very much a part of his generation. But I compare my own attitudes to those of my parents. And then I compare my attitudes to those of my children. And you do see, I guess evolution is the correct word.
How old are your kids?
My kids range in age from 25 to 7.
And how do you see their attitudes as different from yours generationally, if I may get that personal?
Well, I mean, it's far less of a hang-up, I guess, if you will. My parents were educated at an historically black college and university. Their world was completely segregated. I went to high school and a college that were both only 10% African-American. So I've always been immersed in mainstream culture. Yet, as advanced as I believe my viewpoints are in comparison to my parents, they really lag behind those of my children.
You quote the columnist E.J. Dion, who said the right wing was unhappy with Obama's interest in shutting down the culture wars, I guess because the right wing considers it in their interest to pursue these wars in the political sector. But you say those embers were doused long before Obama came on the scene.
Right. I mean, one of my favorite examples is we look at the rapper 50 Cent, who sort of espouses this thug mentality that many of us believe is quote-unquote bringing the country down. Yet he's one of the most lucrative product spokesmen in the history of American marketing. I mean, his vitamin water contract is utterly successful. So I make the argument that if these supposed exemplars of the downfall of American culture are so welcome in our living rooms, then imagine our response to a Harvard-educated black man.
Although maybe the culture wars have just moved on to other things. Maybe it's not so much over race and civil rights and affirmative action anymore, but they still rage over gay rights, abortion rights, religion and state, maybe America's relationship with Islam. In the 9/11 world, our culture war is a culture war issue today.
Well, I think that's a valid point. I mean, one of the things that I looked at was flag burning, for example, which was a convenient cultural war distraction, but was not based on race. So, yeah, I think you're probably right to suggest that it continues to rage in other areas.
You quote Jack Schaefer, who writes for Slate.com, who says Obama has a Christ-like quality for lots of people, especially white people. Talk about great expectations, Christ-like.
Well, you know, it was interesting for me to hear him talk about that from the perspective of a white American, because this messianic strain has always run through African American communities in terms of our leadership. We do tend to impose Christ-like expectations on those who rise as spokesmen. And you know, it's always been a distraction. It's always been an anchor around the neck of whoever would rise. So for me, it was very illuminating to see that mainstream culture undergoes some of those same reactions.
And you said Christ-like, especially for white people. Why especially for white people?
Well, I think he was suggesting that he conveniently, and this happens in the African-American community too, he sort of serves as a symbol as much as he serves as a person. And sometimes we look at a Christ-like figure as someone who can sort of expiate our guilt. And I think that white's acceptance of Obama sometimes provoked those thoughts.
And this gets into the whole hot button phrase, which you have the most interesting few pages about in your book of anything that I've read anywhere. And that is the phrase, if I may say it, magic Negro.
Yes.
Right? It's a hot button because of the way Rush Limbaugh has used it after an op-ed in the LA Times by an African-American. But let's talk about it. in pop culture. You trace the phrase to something that movie buffs have been saying since maybe the 1950s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's just that Magic Negro is a character that exists to sort of advance the lives of white people without particular attention to his own life. And I actually argue that they existed in literature before they existed in movies. And so
Jim for Huck Finn?
Exactly, exactly. Uncle Tom in Uncle Tom's Cabin. I mean, the prototypical Magic Negro.
But Uncle Tom, at least what Uncle Tom has come to represent, and say Sidney Poitier and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, are very different cultural icons.
Yes, and I mean, in fact, it's sort of encouraged, for me, a reevaluation of Sidney Poitier, because I grew up in a generation that tended not to admire him, to look at him as a symbol of an emasculated black man. But in going back and looking at all those films again, I saw how necessary it was for him to do what he did. He made it possible for other figures to emerge later.
Give us the litany, and you give such a long list, it's really entertaining, in the book, a few of the other characters from big films who fit that role.
Well, it's hard to look at Stephen King films, for example, as an African-American and not realize to what extent he relies on magic Negroes. There's the figure in The Stand. The John Coffey figure in The Green Mile. There's another figure played by Scatman Crothers in the original movie version of The Shining. These characters, Bagger Vance, the legend of Bagger Vance, they continue to appear. The Secret Life of Bees is probably the most recent example.
And what do? They let white people off the hook?
Well, they sort of redeem white people. They give white people an opportunity to shed the stereotype which hampers them, which is that all white people are racist and unable to see black people as human beings. So these alliances are formed across racial lines, and we all feel good.
Does Barack Obama fit this role?
I think to a certain extent he does. But what I argue in the book is it's not necessarily a bad thing, that it's actually an advance from seeing someone as such as Barack Obama as someone who's capable of engendering redemption, as opposed to seeing him as this malevolent threat, as some symbol of the ways in which the country is going down.
Is there some resentment of that in the black community? There certainly was when he started out, when there were all these questions about whether he's really black, even. Those questions seem to have disappeared, at least from public discourse, and based on the turnout of African Americans in the election and the percentage with which they voted for Obama, it became kind of a moot point. How much did that go away, and how much is that still a little bit below the surface, people watching with a wary eye because Obama is just so nice to everybody?
Right, right. Well, I think it comes from a larger suspicion that if a black man is particularly embraced by white people, then he must have some ulterior motive or agenda that we don't know about. And it is a specter that has been raised in political contests before. Cory Booker in Newark, for example, and other places. So it continues to be a suspicion, but I think it's one that so far Obama has overcome.
We have just a few minutes for now, and I think we're going to speak again later with Jabari Asim, who's the author of a brand new book coming out today, What Obama Means for Our Culture, Our Politics, Our Future. We have a lot more inauguration coverage. Of course, we'll have the inaugural itself. Once it begins, people are going to start getting seated, and we'll be bringing you all of that, the past presidents and all of that, at around 11 o'clock. You can participate on our website. Here's something from our site, by the way. Robert from Manhattan posted our first post of the day. It is fabulous to watch the TV images from Washington and see the American flag in the hands of people who wave it in celebration of something positive. So you can post your thoughts and feelings for the morning at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Leonard Lopate will be here this afternoon after the inaugural address. So it's inauguration coverage all day here on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. Is Obama's 10-year-old daughter, Malia, the most prescient of all as we look ahead toward this address, when she just kind of popped out with that line last week, first African-American president, better be good.
Yeah, I think she spoke what a lot of people were thinking and perfectly illustrated the magnitude of the expectation that rests on Obama's shoulders as he prepares this address.
How about your expectation?
Well, you know, I waver between wanting him to do something just wonderfully symbolic and do that soaring oratory that he does, but also reflecting the serious moment that we're in, the serious conditions that we face. I would like to see some of that solemn tone that he adopted in his later days of the campaign in his public addresses.
All right. Jabari Asim, author of What Obama Means. We'll talk to you again later. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
WNYC, it's Inauguration 2009.
WNYC support comes from Cultural Arts Partner American Symphony Orchestra, presenting Music of the Other Germany, featuring Marjorie Owens, soprano, on January 25th, 3 p.m. at Avery Fisher Hall. Pre-concert discussion with Leon Botstein 75 minutes prior to the performance. Tickets at americansymphony.org. Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, the best cancer care anywhere, offering advanced procedures whose goal is to not only save life, but to preserve the quality of life. 800-525-2225 or mskfirst.org. WNYC gratefully acknowledges the backing of our corporate underwriters and would like to add your business to our diverse list of supporters. To become a WNYC underwriter, contact Executive Director Vincent Gardino at 646-829-4477.
Hi, this is Mary from Peekskill, New York. Day of inauguration, in between tears of joy, I will be at a party, and for them I will sing A Change Is Gonna Come, Sam Cooke, and also, oh my God, I can't believe it's happened already, these emotions, I apologize, Nina Simone, the song Nina Simone made famous, Feeling Good, and I am feeling good and hopeful that this is a change that is going to come. Thank you so much.
It's the inauguration of Barack Obama on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer, and Mary's not the only one singing that song today. I'm sure many in D.C. are humming that tune, Change Is Gonna Come. D.C., where WNYC's culture reporter, Siddhartha Mitter, is. Siddhartha, welcome back to WNYC's studios in New York. Hello.
Hey, Brian. I hope you can hear me okay.
I love what I'm hearing. What is that in the background?
Well, folks here are getting treated to a complete rebroadcast of the Lincoln Memorial Concert. So anybody who missed it is out here on the Mall right now. That was Pete Seeger finishing his sing-along. We're getting the whole concert here, and taking it in is just an immensity of people. The area we are, where I am right now, is probably about a mile back from the Capitol, back by like the fourth or fifth Jumbotron back, close to the Washington Monument. And this area where I've been out for a couple of hours now has just filled in and filled in. And it's jam-packed back here, so I can only imagine what it's like further up.
So I have to ask you, does this replaying of the Lincoln Memorial event include the prayer by Reverend Gene Robinson, which got excluded from the HBO telecast of it, which generated a tremendous number of protests to us, to others, and then the Obama folks actually apologized for what they said was an inadvertent omission?
Well, I hate to say it, but we did not get that invocation by Reverend Robinson in the replay here.
Reverend Robinson, the first openly gay Episcopal bishop who was tapped by Barack Obama to give that prayer before the Lincoln Memorial ceremonies and concert and Obama's speech on Sunday, largely in response to the protest over his selection of Rick Warren, who we will hear give the actual invocation at the inaugural today. So tell us what else is going on, Siddhartha. What's the scene? What are people doing?
Well, people are huddling right now. It's really quite cold, and every once in a while the sun comes out from behind the thin clouds that we've got here, and everybody welcomes the sun, and people are following the concert, and there is a real kind of tailgating, outdoor concert kind of atmosphere here, except for the weather, and so when the performers from the concert are calling out to the crowd, people are calling back to them as if it was happening live. Surrounded by people here, there's some folks around me from Columbus, Ohio, from Oakland, California. There was a guy who walked by, said he was from Staten Island, and then disappeared into the crowd before we could go any further with him. People are just waiting, basically. It's a waiting scene. It's an outdoor concert scene, except that it is cold.
We just heard Jabari Asim say he hopes that Obama gets solemn in his speech, as he's been in recent addresses, and not just expansive, like in the early Yes We Can addresses. What are you getting from the crowd? What are you getting about the meaning of this moment? Is it just, you know, spring break, tailgating, as you use that word, or is there also the profundity of the moment really rippling through everybody?
I think Jabari is onto it. The profundity of the moment has been, I think, growing on everybody here in Washington, and that's come in over the past two or three days. You know, I've been here for about three, 4 days now, and the crowds really started coming in yesterday. And everywhere, I talked to a lot of people out on the street yesterday, and everywhere you went, people were really dwelling on how relaxed it was, on how even though it's crowded, how easy it was and how people were talking to each other. And there was a real kind of feeling of calm that people were alluding to and maybe even talking about in their own emotions. There was not much hooting and hollering, and nor was there that much. I saw some protests or some events that were meant to give a good riddance type feeling to President Bush, but there were really not that many people. There are some people going around with arrest Bush signs and so on, but very little negativity on a high level, and also very little enormous kind of irrational exuberance, a real feeling that something important is going on here and everybody is just going to wait as long as it takes and witness it.
Who's that singing America?
We are getting one of the choruses, one of the
That's
choirs.
That's all right. Hang on. Shh. Look it up. We're going to listen for a second. Let's just bring it up. And Siddhartha, you know, it brings me back to a post on our website that I read a little while ago. Robert in Manhattan wrote, "It's fabulous to watch the TV images from Washington and see the American flag in the hands of people who wave it in celebration of something positive. Its ownership has finally been pried from the hands of the bullies and the dividers. That is a bit of restructuring we can all believe in." So whether that's everybody's politics or not, certainly a lot of people feel that way. Do you feel a kind of new patriotism in the air in this crowd among people who might have shrunk from the word patriotism?
Absolutely, and let's be direct here. There are a lot of people of color, a lot of African Americans in the crowd here. A very strong African American component to the whole energy in Washington in the past few days. A lot of people. When I was going around looking for people from New York, there are a lot of black folks talking about, "We're from Alabama, we're from Louisiana, we're from Tennessee, et cetera, et cetera." And that's the crowd that's waving the flags now. And plenty of people have commented on the feeling that you and Jabari were talking about.
Is the crowd self-segregating?
The crowd is just not at all. I mean, people have been talking to people and relaxing, giving each other directions on Metro, and it's a really, really positive and heartwarming picture of America that has been delivered in Washington these past few days.
All right, let's listen again. WNYC's Siddhartha Mitter, stay there. And WNYC's Allison Lichter is also joining us. She is keeping her eye on cyberspace this morning. Of course, so much of Obama's success came through things going viral on cyberspace. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Brian.
What are you watching out there in cyberspace?
Well, primarily I'm watching all of the action on WNYC.org. You know, in addition to the posts that you've been citing on the Brian Lehrer Show Inauguration Day homepage, we also have a whole set of guest bloggers who are contributing their thoughts to, you know, this important occasion. And I thought it was great that we started with some of the kids at the Democracy Charter School in Harlem. You know, you started your show talking to some of the kids up there about what this day meant to them. And one of our bloggers bloggers, Robert George, has been wondering about what he calls the change from the tragic four to the transformative two. He's talking about four little girls, you know, who were killed in 1963 by the bombing in Birmingham. And now he's wondering about Malia and Sasha, and he's optimistic about their future, about what this administration will mean for them and for children all over the country. So he's also asking kind of what do Malia and Sasha mean for us today? The last kids we identified with so strongly were perhaps the Kennedy children. John John was iconic at the start of the Kennedy administration, you know, hiding under his dad's desk, and then the tragic end of that administration with John John saluting his dad in the funeral march. So we're wondering online, what do Malia and Sasha mean for us? What does Obama mean for our children? So that's one of the conversations we're watching on WNYC.org.
Allison, I don't know our entire roster of guest bloggers, but is there any Netroots skepticism of Obama that you're able to pick up? We certainly had some callers yesterday who were concerned about his tacking to the center.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the key kind of disagreements that we're looking at online is, of course, the decision to choose Rick Warren to lead the invocation today, and then the kind of ensuing conversation about Gene Robinson's exclusion from the HBO broadcast. And one of the things that I think is interesting that's happening online is we have a blogger, Young Gene Lee, who's actually a playwright, who's written a play that's running off-Broadway right now called The Shipment, and it's a black identity politics play. And she's written about how she strongly disagrees with the choice of Rick Warren to deliver the invocation, but she comes from a Korean-American evangelical Christian family. And so she's doing battle sort of within herself around whether or not to be openly in support of gay rights. And what she's talking about, should she be making a gay rights show now? And also being loyal to her parents and the beliefs that she grew up with as an evangelical Christian. I think that debate is one that probably a lot of folks are wondering about. And also wondering about whether Obama can be consistent in his message for change for all Americans, or whether gay constituencies are expendable at this time.
Siddhartha, are you picking any of that ambivalence up in the crowd down there? Or are the people who bothered to make this trip just the true believers who want to dwell in the beauty of the moment?
Well, I really have not picked up on much of that ambivalence in the past few days in Washington at all. I mean, again, perhaps, as you're saying, it's a self-selected crowd here. The people that are here really are here to celebrate. I have not seen any protests about that. And I think that, I mean, I have had some side conversations with people who disagreed with the Rick Warren pick, but that's not at all anything close to the dominant energy right now. And I think that a lot of people have been happy to just put that aside right now because the historical nature of what's happening right now is the center, and there'll be time for that conversation tomorrow or even later on this afternoon, but certainly not right now in the last hour or two before the inauguration itself.
And going on elsewhere in that town while you're around the stage, President-elect Obama has just arrived at the White House. He and President Bush are together there right now. So the transition in a very formal, a very physical sense now has really begun, and they will both make their way over to the site of the inauguration for the official transfer of power. Something that should give every American goosebumps every time it happens in such a peaceful way. So much contentiousness so often in our country, but no doubt about the peaceful transition of power. Something, Siddhartha, that maybe we take for granted a little bit too much.
Absolutely. And I was, when I was looking at the minute-by-minute rundown of how it's going to happen as we get up to noon, and every minute there's, you know, something happening. And at a certain point, I know that President Bush and Laura Bush will be introduced and will sit, and Vice President Cheney will be introduced and will sit. And I did catch myself looking at that program and wondering, I wonder what the reaction of the crowd is going to be at that moment. Are there going to be boos, or is there going to be polite applause? Is there going to be silence? I guess we'll find out soon enough.
And Allison Lichter monitoring cyberspace in our newsroom. Another post from our Brian Lehrer Show page. It's overhyped, creating exactly the opposite effect intended.
Yeah, I know. I really also like the post here that says, I wish I started a new job with so much fanfare without actually really doing anything. And I think that that's kind of part of what we're seeing online, is that while the celebrations are going on in Washington and exude a kind of uniform enthusiasm, I think online we can really get into some of the underlying debates that still do affect many Americans. I mean, the enthusiasm of the energy in Washington is one thing, but absolutely, online we can start to really work out some of the issues.
WNYC's Allison Lichter monitoring cyberspace this morning. WNYC's Siddhartha Mitter in D.C. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
WNYC receives support from Con Edison, serving New York City and Westchester County and helping customers to use energy wisely every day. Energy-saving tips are available at coned.com.
Every weekend, WNYC takes you to the heart of Lake Wobegon. This April, Garrison Keillor brings a Prairie Home Companion here to New York. WNYC listeners can be the first to buy tickets for 5 live performances at the Town Hall. Tickets are available first come, first served at the events page at WNYC.org.
If you're new to WNYC this morning and enjoying our inauguration coverage, why not sign up for the Brian Lehrer Show daily podcast? It's free. You can sign up at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and while you're there, post a comment about this historic day. WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Inauguration Day in America. Good morning, everyone. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and everyone is waiting for the speech. Expectations are totally out of control, but Barack Obama, the orator, is already legendary before taking office. We know he's been studying Lincoln and JFK. We know he'll ask us in his way to ask not what our country can do for us, but what we can do for our country. But does that mean he'll be able to fix the healthcare system, create jobs, or keep America safe? Maybe just for today. It doesn't yet matter, because this is a moment unto itself. Or maybe the expectations are just totally out of control. Our inauguration coverage continues with the latest news. This is WNYC FM and AM New York and WNYC.org.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Carl Castle. Throngs of people are taking their places in the cold on the west front of the Capitol and the National Mall in preparation for the inaugural ceremony for President-elect Barack Obama. But the men of the hour, the current and soon-to-be president, are gathering for coffee at the White House. NPR's Julie Rofner has more.
It's one of the traditional Inauguration Day events. The current First Family, in this case George and Laura Bush, invites its successors, Barack and Michelle Obama, to the White House before they depart together to Capitol Hill for the noontime swearing-in ceremony. Also scheduled to attend the White House gathering are Vice President Mrs. Cheney and Vice President-elect Joe Biden and his wife Jill, along with members of the congressional leadership. After the ceremony on the west front of the Capitol, the new president will have lunch with members of Congress, while the Bushes will leave directly for their flight back to Texas. Julie Rovner, NPR News, Washington.
Meanwhile, thousands of people are gathering on the National Mall awaiting for the inauguration that will take place in a little less than 2 hours. Thousands of others are gathering along the parade route down Pennsylvania Avenue. NPR's Brian Naylor is at a security checkpoint near the parade route.
I'm standing at the corner of 12th and E Streets in downtown Washington, just a block north of the Pennsylvania Avenue, which is the inaugural parade route. It's a security checkpoint, and there are just a mass of people filling up the entire block, waiting in line to go through security to get to watch the inauguration parade.
NPR's Brian Naylor. Europe is awaiting the inauguration of Barack Obama as the 44th president of the United States. Eleanor Beardsley has this report from Paris.
Les États-Unis retiennent leur souffle à la veille de l'investiture de Barack Obama.
French television and radio stations are airing wall-to-wall coverage of the inauguration today. A recent poll showed 76% of the French have a positive view of and high expectations for the new American president. Obama has similar support in countries across Europe. In Spain, Prime Minister José Luis Zapatero said an Obama effect could shorten the global recession. And Spanish newspaper El País published a photo of Obama and his wife Michelle above the headline, "The American Dream Comes to Power." After years of strained transatlantic relations under President Bush, Europe has enormous expectations of Obama. As one French government official put it, with the election of Obama, Europe and America once again share the same values. For NPR News, I'm Eleanor Beardsley in Paris.
Fears of a spreading global banking crisis are weighing in on Wall Street today, sending prices down. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at this hour is down 140 points to 8140. The NASDAQ is down by 37 points to 1492. This is NPR.
And this is WNYC in New York at 10:04. Good morning. I'm Sotirios Johnson. More details are emerging from earlier reports of problems with the engines on the U.S. Airways jet that made that dramatic emergency landing on the Hudson River last week. According to the National Transportation Safety Board, one of the two engines on the plane experienced a compressor failure 2 days before the crash. CNN reports that passengers on that earlier flight reported hearing loud bangs after takeoff. And CNN quotes two passengers as saying the bangs came from the right side of the plane, but they say a short time later, the situation appeared to return to normal. Mayor Bloomberg is among the many people from our area who have descended on Washington for the inauguration today. Asked on New York One what his Inauguration Day message to New Yorkers would be, Bloomberg invoked last week's successful emergency plane landing and rescue operation on the Hudson.
If you look, our police, fire, private sector, the ferry boats, everybody worked together. And I think for this country, everybody can work together. Both ends, Pennsylvania Avenue, both sides of the aisle, federal, state, city, we've got to all work together.
Bloomberg's guests at the inauguration are the widow and the mother of Terrence Tolbert, a longtime New York City political operative who became the director of Obama's successful Nevada campaign. Tolbert died of a heart attack 2 days before the presidential election. New Jersey school districts have been told they should freeze all non-essential spending. Education Commissioner Lucille Davey has written the schools asking them to tighten their belts immediately. She says she doesn't know how much aid districts will get in the state's 2009-2010 budget. In the forecast for today, a mix of sun and clouds, only getting up to about 28 degrees. Then tonight will be partly cloudy with a low near 17. Right now it's 20 degrees in Central Park. We have mostly sunny skies. Alternate side parking rules are suspended today for snow removal, but you do have to feed the meters. It's 10:06.
Support for NPR comes from Microsoft, providing people-ready enterprise solutions, software based on how people really work.
It's the inauguration of Barack Obama on WNYC. America is ready. New York is ready.
When Ronald Reagan was elected president, I cried twice. When Bush 41 became president, I threw my hands up. Bill Clinton spoke to the left but worked for the right. Under Bush 43, I've weathered 8 years of, well, torture. The inauguration of President Barack Hussein Obama is an occasion of real change, real hope, and the promise that, yes, we can live up to the ideals of our Constitution. Finally, America can enter the 21st century.
My name is Ba Tejani. I think the Obama family should have Saturday dance sessions, and they should call it Dance Away the Recession and invite the public to come and dance away the recession.
This is Jamie Scott calling. I'm very excited. Obama!
My name is Arnold Keller, and I represent the Weeklake High School Alumni Association in Newark. For the past 10 years, I've helped the kids at an urban school. For the inauguration, we've set up screens in the cafeteria and in the auditorium so that the entire school can watch the inauguration of Barack Obama.
Good morning. This is Lola from New Jersey. We as Americans are counting on this new administration to better our economy, to give us world peace, to give us a unified health system. We'll each individually, personally become better if we each try our best to make our country better.
WNYC listeners who called our pre-inauguration hotline. 23 degrees in Washington, D.C., wind chill of 10 with the wind northwest at 15 miles per hour. WNYC's Andrea Bernstein is there. Is that about how cold it feels to you, Andrea?
Yes, but Brian, the sun is out and the sky is blue. So it's much better than it felt about 5 a.m. this morning.
And you've been going since at least then. I heard you on the takeaway this morning talking about your hand warmers that you were shuffling from hand to hand, hoping to keep both your palms from freezing.
Yes, well, to walk up the entire mall from our broadcast post down by the Washington Monument up to the Capitol, which was a somewhat, at times, a harrowing journey. But that fortunately got me warmed up, so I'm a little warmer than I was then.
Where are you, and what are we hearing in the background?
I am two rows behind a military band that will be performing, and then right behind that is the podium where Barack Obama will be sworn in. So I'm about 20 feet from that podium, which is a little raised up in the air. The music in the background is just some pre-music that they're playing through the speakers, although it does look like the band is, they came in about 20 minutes ago, and they may start playing soon.
So you are right in front of the podium. How many feet are you going to be from Barack Obama when he takes the oath of office and delivers his inaugural address?
Maybe 20 feet, maybe 25 feet. So
wow.
I think that this qualifies as a front row seat on history.
You want to scalp your ticket?
I still have my ticket. They didn't take it away from us. So I'll post an image of it on the WNYC website later on today.
Andrea, on a very serious note, D.C. Metro officials are saying a person has been struck by a subway train on the Red Line, prompting them to close two downtown stations and turn around some trains. And apparently this is forcing people to walk further to reach the National Mall. Metro spokesman Doug Karras says the incident happened shortly before 9:30, and he says it's not clear whether crowding on the platforms is to blame. Had word of that reached you yet?
No, I have not got any word of that. And I just want to say that if you hear the music in the background, it is the U.S. Marine Band, which is looks like they're poised to start. I mean, I do know the metros were already very crowded yesterday. And some of these metro cars are shorter than the platforms. So people, when the train pulls in, people rush up the platform to try to get on the cars. And yesterday afternoon, I did experience some pushing and some shoving. So while I wouldn't want to speculate, I would just say the metros are very, very crowded. In fact, I met quite a few people this morning who said rather than try to get into the metro, they just walked, some from 3-4 miles away, to not try to brave that. People were waiting who did get in, so that some of them had to wait for 5-6 trains to go by. But I just do want to say that I'm now looking out past the Capitol, down the mall to the Washington Monument, and it looks like it is completely full. So if you're not here now, you may not be able to get to the mall, and you may just be able to get as far as the surrounding seats.
Todd Zwillick from Capital News Connection was reporting the same thing, and he's a longtime D.C. hand. He told us on the air earlier that he has never seen the mall completely full before, but that's what it looks like right now. And D.C. police are now projecting the inaugural crowd, or have been projecting crowds of 1 million to 2 million. Planners have been saying the attendance could easily top what they say is the biggest official inaugural attendance in the past, which was 1.2 million at Lyndon Johnson's 1965 inauguration. That's the largest crowd that the National Park Service has on record for the location, though the organizers of the Million Man March may beg to differ. Tell us one thing about the ceremony, which officially gets going at 11:30, though there will be some events leading up to that that will also be carrying. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California presides over the inaugural ceremony. Why her?
She's the chair of the Presidential Inaugural Committee, and I'm not sure that the jiu-jitsu that went into the selection of that post, but that does put her in that position. The other people that are on it, on the inaugural committee, are Harry Reid, Robert Bennett, Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, and John Boehner. So it does seem to be the rest of the congressional leadership. But I just wanted to mention that I met a woman this morning who is a lifelong Washington, D.C. resident who said she's been to every inaugural since Truman. And she was out on the mall this morning at about 5:30 with her family, and they were sort of huddling together on a blanket. But she said that this was the biggest crowd that she's seen in Washington, because, of course, people have been coming down here for the past week. I think that one of the fascinating things about the Obama phenomenon is that people just want to be part of it, and he seems to be able to stir that emotion in people that makes them want to have a higher sense of purpose, a sense of collective purpose. And he's got an incredible launching pad from which to deliver his speech this morning, because he already sort of has sort of case closed on, do we, people want to be part of something bigger? Do they want to be part of a collective movement?
And, of course, a lot more on that to come after the speech, as well as leading up to the speech. WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, 20 feet from where the new president will be speaking. Of course, we'll be hearing from you through the day. And we go from D.C. to City Hall in Lower Manhattan right now, where WNYC's Bob Henley is. There's a crowd there that's going to watch the inauguration. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, I would say it's ecstatic jubilation.
You answered my next question. I don't even have to ask you what the mood is now.
Right.
Now, set the scene for us. Are you out in City Hall Park, where a lot of New Yorkers have been, where people have gathered in the past either to protest or to celebrate? Or are you actually with a crowd inside City Hall?
There are every place, I mean, practically even including a janitor's closet with a door that you're going to fit a TV in, has a crowd. The City Council chamber, the one with the balcony that you usually see on television, that is packed to capacity. The members-only lounge, where only council members and their staff members can go, that belongs to the people today, too. In fact, every place of every large space, with the exception of the mayor's blue room, is filled to capacity. And this is all thanks, actually, to a council staffer. Carrie Mobley had this idea, took it to the speaker, and so, you know, close to 1,000 New Yorkers, and even over on 250 Broadway, where they have council hearing rooms, they also have a crowd. And it's really amazing. We have, I did get to speak with the teacher from the university neighborhood school, middle school, that brought 26th graders here. They had the front row. They've been studying the election. Elizabeth Engwer said this has been the total focus of the class, and it's been really easy these days, she says, to get kids to pay attention.
And that was another tough ticket to be one of the, I guess it's about 2,000 admitted to City Hall.
About 1,000. All venues together, about 1,000, actually.
And is there any buzz before you go about what all these people at City Hall are hoping to get for New York City from the new president or the stimulus bill, or aren't they dealing with it at that level
right now? It's much deeper here. I mean, I think that there was a national dream that was deferred, if you will, with the string of assassinations that cut through the American narrative in the 60s. And so I think a lot of people look at today's festivities as a down payment on the future for democracy. So it's really an historical moment. I mean, this is a great place actually to be. The building, of course, 1812, almost 200 years old. This is a place that Lincoln laid in state after his assassination. So this is very much a part of the American narrative, and these people just want to be a part of it.
WNYC's Bob Henley at New York City Hall. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
It is the inauguration of Barack Obama on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. When we continue in a minute, we'll talk to an immigrant to this country who has devoted his life and his work to the balance between individual and community in this country, something that will be a main theme of the Obama address.
WNYC is supported by Meetup.com, where New Yorkers are forming hundreds of local groups, including ski groups, book clubs, professional associations, and more. Anyone can join in or start a group. More at Meetup.com. BAM, presenting Laurie and Friends, a concert featuring Laurie Anderson, Nona Hendrix, Arturo O'Farrell, Sarah Mitchelson, plus cabaret and gospel music, January 21st only. Tickets at 718-636-4100 or BAM.org. Cornell Paper and Box Company, distributing corrugated boxes, die cuts, and bubble pack across the United States, Canada, and internationally. Located across the historic Brooklyn waterfront. More at CornellRobbins.com.
Hi, I'm Leonard Lopate. Stay with us for WNYC's complete coverage of Inauguration Day. We'll follow all the news and developments during the nation's leadership transition and hear reactions from people in New York City and from around the world. That and more on the Leonard Lopate Show on Inauguration Day on 93.9 FM and AM 820 WNYC.
I chose to run for president at this moment in history because I believe deeply that we cannot solve the challenges of our time unless we solve them together, unless we perfect our union by understanding that we may have different stories, but we hold common hopes, that we may not look the same and may not have come from the same place, but we all want to move in the same direction towards a better future for our children and our grandchildren.
Invoking the theme of community in his race speech in Philadelphia on March 18th of last year, Barack Obama, and today's inaugural address is expected to focus on the theme of responsibility and community. Amitai Etzioni has been thinking and writing about this for many, many years. He is best known as the founder of the modern communitarian movement in the United States, an attempt to bring our individualism and concern for community back into balance. He teaches sociology at George Washington University, has written 24 books, and joins us today from Israel, where he happens to be. Hello from New York, Dr. Etzioni. Will you be watching the inauguration there?
Very, very much so, and with great delight. I mean, there are a thousand reasons for us to celebrate today, but one you just mentioned, the time has really come for this idea, which President Obama expressed in his speeches and above all in his book, Audacity of Hope, that our rights are sacred, but so are our responsibilities. We are individuals, but we are also members of one another.
How does that translate to specifics? It's a wonderful notion that probably everybody would agree with in the abstract.
Well, there are two major themes, and I grant you that originally it just sound like convenient or savvy political slogans, but behind them are a lot of specifics, and that is that we want to get everybody into the tent. Example, Obama recently announced that he will not investigate all kind of ill doings of the Republicans, and there's plenty to go around, and past administrations, Democrats and Republicans went to investigate the past, got speakers, members of Congress, members of the Department of Justice to kick them out, to chase them out of office, and it created bad blood, which then spilled into the next administration. Obama gave a very early and clear signal he's not going to do that. This is one way of not just talking community, but building community.
That's an interesting example.
McCain, and so on and so on.
Yes, he went to the party for McCain yesterday. But on whether or not they're going to investigate for possible prosecution, anything that may have been crimes on the part of the Bush administration, one could certainly argue that it's in the long-term interest of the community for justice to be served if crimes were committed.
If there is a specific crime, yes. And he said so. If there's a specific allegation, there's a force of justice. But to go on a witch hunt, finding something, it's just South Africa found during the Truth and Justice Commission, Argentina found, the Germans found. When surely the Israel Magma hideous crimes, the Nazis, the Argentinian generals committed in South Africa, that there is a time for healing. There's a time to move on because we face enormous challenges. And we do need Republicans, we need minorities, we need everybody to work together and some. That's anyhow, you ask me where Obama is going. I think he makes it as clear as possible. For him, community is not just a theme. For him, community is a policy.
Dr. Amitai Etzioni, founder of the communitarian movement in the United States, thank you very much. And we're going to check.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to check in again with someone in a red state. We did this earlier in the morning in Texas. Now we're going to Wichita, Kansas, to see what's going on in that part of the country on this election day. Mark McCormick is Metro columnist for the Wichita Eagle. Hi, Mark. Hello from New York. It's WNYC in New York. Hello.
Hey, how are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great. I understand you're spending Inauguration Day with a bunch of local folks gathered at a restaurant. What's that like?
Yeah, it's a pretty cool place called the Fox and the Hound Pub and Grill. buffet, people kind of piling in here now, bunting, flags. It's kind of a nice atmosphere.
Wichita, from what I gather, is about 60% Republican, something like that?
Maybe more.
So what would you say the overall mood in the city is today?
It's interesting, man. It's really interesting. I've been thinking about this and how best to describe it. I would describe it like an older couple. Have you ever seen an older couple? And you meet the husband, and he kind of introduces the wife with this shrug, like, yeah, she's with me. Well, think of the inauguration day here like that introduction. The marriage is solid. I'm not going anywhere, but the thrill is gone. Can we just get this over with?
What are the fears?
Oh, not so much fear. Well, I guess fear is a good word, because if you think about the crises that we have going, we have a couple of wars going, our economy is teetering. There's this sense that we need to get right to running this country. We need him to get right to running this country. So there's this hope that he is everything that he has been billed to be, he being Obama. But we don't need all the pomp and circumstance. I talked to some people this morning here already, some Republicans, who were saying, you know, we really need to spend $150 million for all these inauguration ceremonies.
What did they say when Ronald Reagan was inaugurated?
They didn't say anything about that.
There's a lot of pomp and ceremony then.
Yeah, exactly. But there's this sense that the time, there's this fierce urgency of now, as the president-elect has said, let's get to work.
They must feel like the media are totally out of control.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a sense not just with Republicans, but just in general, there's this sense that the media is in love with this guy. Having been in the media for almost 20 years, I get the sense that even people in the media had a sense, maybe more of a sense than the average person, about the direction that our country has gone in. They see more clearly than everyday people the difficulties that have been created over the last few years that need to be rectified. So if there is a sense that people might be cheering for Obama, I don't know if it's cheering. I mean, as soon as he gets in office, they're going to be asking some really tough questions, I guarantee you that.
So that's
But there was a real sense that we needed to change course.
So that's the bulk of Wichita kind of shrugging like, okay, let's get on with it. Who's at the Fox and Hound?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like I said, I mean, there are Republicans here. Republicans who jumped ship from President Bush. He actually did a lot to turn a lot of Republican people into Democrats. I've always had the sense, too, that a Democrat in Kansas could move somewhere else and they'd be a Republican, and that if there were Republicans who lived elsewhere who moved here, they'd probably become Democrats. And that's kind of like the hostess here, the lady who set up this event. She said her parents are from the East Coast. There were Republicans there. They moved to Kansas. Now they're Democrats.
That's the geographical center of America. And now maybe you found the political center of America right there at the Fox and Hound.
Yeah, it could be.
You said off the air that the campaign brought out racial tension in Wichita. This is not something that we've heard very much during the campaign of Barack Obama. Racial tension in what way?
Oh, my goodness. All these different examples. I wrote a column about this. There, a lady called me and told me about her grandchild coming home from school after the election. And the child was in tears because her playmates wouldn't play with her anymore because Barack Obama had become president. And this little girl happened to be African American. The same woman told me that her sister and her brother, who work here, had been having spirited debates with people, friendly debates with people, about the election. But after the election, people stopped talking to them all together. People they'd had lunch with for years stopped talking to them. And then maybe the icing on the cake was what happened to this woman's daughter. She said that her daughter works at a drive-thru breakfast place. And people were calling her daughter the N-word. They were dropping N-bombs on her and everyone in there, and they're saying, you know, I don't want any N's handling my money. I don't want any N's handling my food. And there was some concern about what to do about these folks because they were regular customers.
So the polls may be showing 80% approval across America for Barack Obama, but at the local level, at the personal level, some of these things are still going on.
Yeah, and I'll say this too. You know, those are some very extreme examples that should go without saying. And there were a lot of people who were, you know, black and white, Democrat and Republican and independent, who were shocked by that kind of behavior. But it did exist here.
For those who have those nerves near the surface, they are raw and exposed. Mark McCormick, Metro columnist for the Wichita Eagle in Wichita, Kansas. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
Now, one of the most moving things about the inauguration along those lines is sure to be the attendance of the Tuskegee Airmen. These were black pilots in World War II, fighter pilots, who were segregated by race and almost weren't allowed into the military at all. As one of them put it, they had to fight for the right to die for their country. President Obama has invited the 300 or so Tuskegee Airmen who are still alive to attend today as honored guests. One of them is New York's own Roscoe Brown, longtime president of Bronx Community College, now teaches at the CUNY Graduate School. He's now 86 years old. He's there in D.C. right now getting ready to attend the inauguration as a special guest. I got to interview Roscoe Brown about the inauguration and the Tuskegee Airmen on CUNY TV last week.
So nice to see you again.
Great to see you again, buddy.
You're going to the inauguration?
Going to the inauguration. Can't wait.
How will they honor you?
Well, I'm going to be in the parade. About 15 of us will be riding in vintage cars down Pennsylvania Avenue. And then about 300 or so will be in the front rows just in front of President Obama. And I'm sure he's going to acknowledge us.
Front rows. Have you ever met him?
I've met him. I received a congressional Black Caucus Education Award about a couple of years ago, and he was there, and we talked a little, and my children and grandchildren got autographs. That was before he was president.
Does this honor make up for something in the past? Is it intended to?
I don't think it's intended to. I think it is a reflection of the fact that they know that President Obama is there because of many, many people, not just the Tuskegee Airmen, but others who fought in the military, others who were in the civil rights movement, et cetera. But because we're in the most glamorous branch of the service, the Air Force, the Air Corps, people got to know us. They didn't know as much as they should have known because the press didn't cover us widely except the black press. But the fact that we did what we did in such an outstanding way, not losing German bombers that we were escorting, shooting down the first jets, blowing up a destroyer, and being so really, really good in the air, it eliminated that myth that said blacks didn't have the courage or coordination to do technical things. And as a result, given the careers of many Tuskegee Airmen after the service, Percy Sutton, who you know became
President,
founded Inner City Broadcasting Company.
President.
Lee Archer, Vice President of General Foods. Coleman Young, the mayor of Detroit. All of those were Tuskegee Airmen. So we feel it is a fulfillment of what we were struggling for.
Tell us your story. How did you wind up in the Tuskegee Airmen?
Well, I grew up in segregated Washington, D.C., and they had high school ROTC. In fact, I marched in Roosevelt's 1937 inaugural parade as a part of the high school cadets from Dunbar High School.
Wow, so this is not your first inaugural
that's
parade.
That's not my first.
They're just separated
they
by,
were by race.
72 years.
See, that's interesting. Washington, D.C. was segregated in terms of the schools and the housing and the theaters, but all the public buildings were open without discrimination. You could go to the Library of Congress, the Smithsonian, and my father, who was in Roosevelt's black cabinet, who was in charge of health for blacks all over the country, would take us, along with my mother, who was a teacher, to one of those historic sites every day, every Sunday. So I saw Lindbergh's plane when I was 5 years old, and I decided then that I loved airplanes. And like many Tuskegee Airmen, I made models, I raced airplanes back and forth. But because of the segregation, the War Department had done a study that said that blacks didn't have the intelligence and the courage to fly airplanes. So that as a result, in 1940, the NAACP and Pullman Car Porters Union, A. Philip Randolph, was going to have an original march on Washington. Roosevelt was running for president for the third term. As a result of that pressure, since the black press was also pressuring for us to be in the top combat unit, they created the Tuskegee Airmen as a quote-unquote experiment. But then as we got into it, they realized they needed more than one squadron, and they ended up training 1,000 pilots. Mm. We ended up going overseas. We ended up doing this great work.
What kind of action did you see?
I flew 68 combat missions, mostly bomber escort missions, but some ground support missions. I have a saying, I got shot at every European capital except London and Paris, because we were high above the bombers, and any aircraft would come up, we would move aside while the bombers went over target. But our job was to protect the bombers, to keep them from being shot down. And we did it so well that the history says we never lost a bomber. Some people say we lost one or two. But we did it very well. And I, on the longest mission of the 15th Air Force on March 24th, 1945, was one of the first, I shot down the first jet over Berlin. We hadn't shot down any jets at that time. So I'm very proud of what I did when I was 23 years old. And I'm even prouder now that because of the efforts of myself and many of us in the civil rights movement, we now have an African-American president.
What happened to you after the war? Did you try to fly in the private sector?
I noticed in one of your introductory statements that we couldn't fly for the airlines. My story is this. I went to the Eastern Airlines office on Fifth Avenue to apply to fly. I was getting ready to go to graduate school, but at some time I said, I want to fly for the Air Force, 1,000 hours, combat pilot. Filled out my application. As I was walking out the door, I remembered I had left my New York Times, so I went back to get it, and the secretary was bawling up my application and throwing it in the wastebasket. And she said, red-faced, I'm sorry, we don't hire Negroes here.
Wow, she just said it to you flat out.
Said, that's exactly what happened. See,
what did you say?
Huh?
What did you say?
I said, welcome back to the good old USA.
Yeah.
Because basically, people accepted discrimination. They accepted anti-Semitism. They accepted anti-Catholicism. And people at that time were not hesitant about saying it. Now, the racism and the religious bigotry is more or less under the table and subtle. But the fact is that it was so blatant then. And when we talk about a changed America, we have a changed America largely because of the success of people like Jackie Robinson, the success of the Tuskegee Airmen, the work of King, the great speeches that we just heard. We have a better understanding of the fact that we're all part of Homo sapiens, and we all have the same basic emotions, talents, etc. All we need is opportunity. And what the Obama administration means to me is that we're going to get opportunity. And if you look at his appointees, he has a range of people from African-American, Latino, Asian, white Americans. He has a range of people. And that's a good start.
Did you hear Terry Williams at the beginning
Terry,
of the show?
Yeah.
In her book, Black Pain, she's a social worker. I'm not hearing black pain in you right now. Where's your anger?
My anger is with all the work I've been doing all these years to get over that. I have an expression, don't get mad, get even. And basically, that's what we did with the Tuskegee Airmen. See, the younger generation does have the luxury of looking back and saying, well, this is what they went through. Why did they take that? Why did they do that? The fact is, certain times, you'd get shot or lynched if you set up. We did do things. I led a sit-in on an air base in Walterboro, South Carolina, to integrate a theater at the threat of a court-martial. Finally, we told the commander that President Roosevelt would be upset that they spent all this money to train us and they put us in jail where we should be flying. So we've always protested, and the anger has shown in terms of our protests. Now, many of us are better at rhetorical anger. Rhetorical anger is great. All of us can give great speeches, but great speeches don't change. I was interested in the earlier points that you were showing in the earlier interviews. At certain times, you can do certain things. And one of the things we know, the black movement has always had its intellectual leaders. It's W.E.B. Du Bois's, it's Rayford Logan's, it's Mary McLeod Bethune's. And they are the ones who move things ahead. And so once we move things ahead, then people like King and Obama can step into that and push the society a little bit more. Life is a journey, not a destination. And basically, part of Obama's trip to the top of the mountain is part of his journey. But he has a long, long journey. He's got 8 more years, hopefully, as president to help change this country.
So what are your hopes for the Obama administration?
Well, my hopes for the Obama administration are, first of all, we'll get some parity in economics. The average black family still makes 70% of the average white family. Women makes 85% of what males make. We've got to have economic parity. That means we've got to have a growth society. That means that the economic stimulus package has to work. That means we need to give it time to work. The other major thing is we have to stop intruding on other people with wars and aggressive actions. We need to use diplomacy. And because this is a global world and a global economy, we've got to deal with the environment. So if we can work on those three things, the economy, peace in the world, and global environment, we will have made major, major changes in the society.
We have 30 seconds left. You'll be attending the inauguration of the first African-American president as an honored guest. Did you ever think you'd live to see this day?
I thought we'd have a black vice president before a black president. But because I'd worked in the vineyard for a long time, I knew it was going to happen, almost like Bobby Kennedy said we'd have a black president in 40 years. He hit it almost on the head. I'm so gratified that I can go there, and we have reached that point.
Roscoe Brown, New York's own Tuskegee Airman and long-term president of Bronx Community College. He is there today, one of the honored guests who will no doubt be hearing about once the ceremony starts, the Tuskegee Airman invited by Barack Obama. Roscoe Brown, I interviewed him last Wednesday on CUNY TV. It's the inauguration of Barack Obama on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. WNYC's Allison Lichter is still keeping her eye on cyberspace this morning, where we have a lot of guest bloggers and a lot of you posting on WNYC.org. Hi, Allison.
Hey, Brian.
So what's the buzz?
I mean, it was really powerful to hear from the Tuskegee Airmen in this conversation about how racism still continues to exist in American society is something that's been pretty active both on the WNYC website and among our guest bloggers. One of them has been talking about how she's concerned that race is no longer an issue because political correctness has taken over in this country. And she's wondering whether just because people are talking about race more openly now, does that mean that racism in the society will be addressed? And, you know, we heard from your reporter in Wichita that that doesn't seem to be the case everywhere.
Indeed. I wonder if the term post-racial, the celebration of Obama's ascendance to the presidency is, rankles some people as being overhyped by the media, as symbolic of progress that hasn't been made at lower levels of society.
Yeah, that's a debate that's happening all over the WNYC.org blog this morning. A whole exchange is taking place between a number of the commenters today about whether the media has played into a kind of sense that, you know, we're in a kind of peace and love situation now and that racism and discrimination is being washed over by our hopes that everything's different now that Obama's in office. In fact, one blogger, Sean from Brooklyn, has said that he fears that more and more people who have hatred toward minorities and immigrants will become even more vocal now. I'm curious why he thinks that, and I think it'd be great to get that conversation to continue on online.
By the way, a very emotional moment right now at the site of the inauguration. Ted Kennedy is taking his place and blowing kisses to the crowd. He's dressed in a blue scarf and a black hat with a wide brim that goes all the way around. So considering his state of health, so much love being shown in the crowd today for Ted Kennedy as he's one of the first to arrive. Some of the sequence of events to come, former presidents will be announced and seated at 11:03. We'll bring you all this live. The Biden family announced and seated shortly after that. Then the Obama family Mrs. Bush and Mrs. Cheney, Mrs. Obama, and Dr. Biden, Joe Biden's wife, and then President Bush and Vice President Cheney. Cheney's in a wheelchair today. He had an accident, apparently unpacking boxes from the home that he's going to be living in. But WNYC's Allison Lichter, monitoring cyberspace. Just tell us real quick, any talk about too much hype, like Obama should be on Mount Rushmore? Was that one of the posts?
Oh, yeah. We've gotten one of our guest bloggers has proposed that it's time to revamp Mount Rushmore. You know, the mountain was completed in 1941. We haven't had a new face on there since then, and he's proposing that Obama be the next one up there. So I'd love to hear whether people think they're ready for a new face on Mount Rushmore. That's a conversation that's happening on the blogs at WNYC.org.
WNYC's Allison Lichter keeping her eye on cyberspace this morning, particularly WNYC.org, with a lot of voices there. Allison, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
And keep adding your voice. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, and you can also read what our special guest bloggers for this Inauguration Day are writing. We are going to speak briefly with a New Yorker who's in D.C. Irene from Syosset went to the ceremony with her 17-year-old daughter, Catherine, and she is good enough to be checking in with us now. Hi, Irene.
Hi.
Where are you?
I'm sitting to the left of the Lincoln Memorial on the grass, in front of the Jumbotron.
Were you able to just see Ted Kennedy? Did he walk out where you could see him?
Yes, we could. Well, on our Jumbotron, we saw his turquoise blue scarf. Yes.
How did you feel?
They're showing it all. It's spectacular. So we're so thrilled to be here. Everybody, it's a sunny day, and everyone's happy, my daughter says.
What do you do in Syosset?
I'm a florist.
Wow. Did you bring flowers for the president?
I did not bring flowers to the president. I brought smiles for the president.
How's your daughter reacting?
Would you like to speak to her?
Okay.
Here she is.
Catherine, 17 years old. Hey, Catherine, you're on WNYC. It's Brian Lehrer in Lower Manhattan. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very happy here. There's so much energy and high energy here that it's kind of unbelievable.
What are people talking about?
They just want to take pictures. That's all they're talking about. They want to take pictures. They're happy about Obama, and I don't think I've ever seen so many happy people in one place before.
What are your hopes for the Obama administration?
My hope, I hope that people are as happy, that this happiness just keeps going. That's what I hope for. I hope this happiness just stays.
Where do you go to school?
And I go to school in Syosset.
Syosset High School?
Yep.
Congratulations on making it to the inauguration. Enjoy.
Thank you very much.
And I hope the whole country becomes as happy as you sound right now.
Oh, thank you very much.
Irene,
I hope so, too.
Irene and Catherine from Syosset down at the ceremony in D.C. It's the inauguration of Barack Obama on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. We continue in a minute.
WNYC support comes from the New York Philharmonic. Host Alec Baldwin tells the story behind the masterpieces of Brahms, featuring Serenade No. 1, performed by the Philharmonic and conductor Riccardo Muti, Friday, January 23rd at 8 p.m., nyphil.org. The New School, hosting an information session for its bachelor's degree program, designed for working adults, offered on campus and online, January 27th at 6:30 p.m. at 55 West 13th Street, on the web at newschool.edu/BA. Freelancers Union, an 85,000-member nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting independent workers and making freelance fair. Information online at freelancersunion.org.
Alone in the stillness.
Aretha Franklin will be singing at the inauguration. President Bush, President-elect Obama leaving the White House together, even as Aretha sings, for the peaceful transfer of power. And I said it earlier in the morning, I'll say it again, something that maybe we take for granted a little bit too much in America, considering what still goes on in so much of the rest of the world. Think of all the contention between President Bush and so many of the people who turned out to vote against him. Think of what a Barack Obama might actually think of a George W. Bush, and who knows, maybe vice versa. But there they are, motivating together now after having walked out of the White House together. Obama arrived a little while ago. They spent a little bit of time together in the White House. President Bush left a note on the Oval Office desk for Obama. They did not disclose the contents, but obviously wishing him well. And now they have, with the cameras showing them, walked out of the White House together and gotten into, I believe, separate cars, but motorcading together to the scene of the inauguration, where, of course, they will both be just minutes from now. We heard Aretha Franklin and evening music host, same car? Somebody's telling me same car? Yes, same car, our newsroom confirms. Interesting conversation taking place right now. I wish I could be a fly on that wall. Our WNYC evening music host, Terrence McKnight, has been in D.C. the past few days, and he joins us now from the mall. He's at Main and 14th Street. Hey, Terrence.
Hello, Brian. I walked away from the mall so I could have this conversation with you.
Okay, I can actually hear you, so I could tell you've walked away from the mall. We just heard a little Aretha to set you up. Do you know what she's going to sing at the inauguration?
I've heard that she's going to sing My Country, 'Tis of Thee.
Oh, that's going to be good.
That's what Marian Anderson sang on that stage in 1939.
Hey, you know what? Aretha Franklin, and I wish I could remember the venue. It was some sporting event. Aretha Franklin sang the best Star Spangled Banner I have ever heard in my life.
Well, you know, last night I heard you playing Precious Memories, and she sang that last night at the Kennedy Center at the annual tribute to Martin Luther King Jr. And it was a wonderful show. And so we're looking forward to hearing her sing today for Barack Obama.
As we bring you this inauguration live, what other music will our listeners be hearing?
Oh, well, there's, of course, the ceremonial music. You know, the United States Marine Band is going to play, you know, special music for the president, special music for the vice president, special music for when Bush enters the stage and for when Cheney enters the stage. So you have that music. You also have a brand new composition written by John Williams for an interesting combination, Brian. It's a combination of piano, cello, violin, and clarinet.
Hmm.
And it's a new composition.
I like
and
it.
So Yo-Yo Ma, Itzhak Perlman, New Yorker Anthony McGill, who plays in the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, and Gabriela Montero is playing piano.
It's not a bad band.
Not a bad band at all.
Why John Williams? You know, he is so mainstream to the point of being cliched. I know a lot of people love John Williams, but, I mean, he's the guy who wrote the movie music for E.T. and Star Wars. He wrote the NBC News theme. I'm pretty sure, you know, da, 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 da. So, I mean, this is as mainstream as you get, John Williams.
I think John Williams may have a Chicago connection, but also his music was played when Barack Obama accepted the nomination. So there is a relationship there. And I understand that Barack Obama likes music by Aaron Copland. And so for listeners who know John Williams' music, there is a similar feel, or John Williams is able to create a similar atmosphere to Aaron Copland's music.
Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones, he was
Jaws.
One July 4th, I had the honor of going up to Boston, where they have that great 4th of July fireworks display, complete with the Boston Pops along the Charles River, and he was conducting the Boston Pops, and that was pretty good. So how about the Marine Band? They'll play Hail to the Chief and anything else?
That's about it. They're going to do Hail to the Chief. They're going to play Hail Columbia. That's when Biden will be sworn in. They're going to play Four Ruffles and Flourishes. That features the Army Herald trumpets. And then they're going to play the Stars and Stripes Forever. And they'll end with the national anthem.
What do you think about band music like that, aesthetically?
I think it's, you know, those trumpets, I mean, you can go back to, you know, the Baroque period with Handel. You know, trumpets have always been used for ceremonies like that. So there is a tradition in that, and I think it's held up over, you know, 300-400 years.
Does any music like that get written anymore, or was it all from a time?
No, I mean, in fact, today, earlier in the pre-ceremonial music, they played a composition by a guy named contemporary composer, Frank Ticelli. And so composers are still writing in that vein.
Has there been more pop music surrounding the inauguration this year than in past years? Did you go to that Lincoln Memorial concert?
You know, I sat and I watched that from the comfort of a friend's home. And, you know, Brian, I think I've paid more attention to this election than elections in the past. But what strikes me about this cycle is that Barack Obama somehow made all these different musics feel cool. He made Americans feel like they had ownership to music that they perhaps didn't listen to. I'm walking through the park today, and I'm singing, and I'm watching people sing music from the concert the other day. This land is your land, this land is my land, and people were swaying, and they were singing just like it was Sunday all over again.
Evening music host Terrence McKnight, hear him Monday through Thursday nights at 7, playing all kinds of music on WNYC 93.9 FM down in D.C. right now for the inauguration. Terrence, enjoy it.
Thank you, Brian.
Little Yo-Yo Ma here. Femi Oke, senior editor of The Takeaway, joins us from D.C. with a special guest. Hi, Femi.
Hello. Good morning, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Actually, I've been walking around and walking through the crowds, the body heat of millions of people can be nice and toasty and warm. Thanks for asking.
Your cell phone is breaking up a little bit. We might have to move you. Who do you have with you?
I am with Maryland National Guard. They're actually just on patrol right now. I've made a standstill for a moment or two. I want to speak to Captain Iwala Simpson. Good morning, Captain. This is Brian.
Captain, I'm just going to repeat this because you're breaking up a little bit. Captain Iwala Simpson with the Maryland National Guard, right?
Yes, good morning.
Captain Simpson, thanks so much for speaking to us. It's Brian Lehrer at WNYC Radio in New York. What's your role there this morning, or are you just there as an American to celebrate the moment?
Actually, this morning, in my role here is on official capacity. I am with a company from the Maryland National Guard, and we're providing support to the civil authorities down here in D.C. in support of the inauguration activity.
And how are things going from that standpoint? Very peaceful, very cooperative crowd. Any incidents?
Things are going very well. Things look like people are enjoying the day. Weather is very, very cold, but we're adjusting, and things are going exceptionally well. The mall is very, very busy, as I'm sure you know, and everyone's monitoring, but it's going well.
We did hear about one subway accident earlier on a Red Line station, at a Red Line station, that may have stopped some of the subway service on that line in toward the mall. And I don't know what effect that was having on people's ability to get there or any crowding in other locations. Are you aware of that situation at all?
I just hear the radio traffic, but I don't really have much information about the incident itself or what effect it's had on the particular areas of the mall. So I'm really not the best person probably to answer that question.
How does this compare to other things you've worked? Have you done events before?
Yes, we always, the Maryland Guard is always happy to provide support to civil authorities, both, you know, in Maryland and surrounding states, et cetera. So we do often work different events, and we enjoy most of them.
Are you enjoying this?
Yes.
Well, give me back to Femi, okay, and congratulations on working this event and on having a great day so far down in D.C. for the millions of people there. Captain Awala Simpson with the Maryland National Guard, thanks for taking a minute to speak with us.
Sure, no problem. Have a great day, and I'll give back the phone to Femi.
Okay,
hello, bye.
Okay, Femi, we got 15 seconds. What's the best souvenir you bought?
Oh, so far, just people's memories and the experience and the excitement, and you can't face that, Brian. You just have to be here.
You're being a professional journalist with the journalist and ethics and the whole thing and not buying the Obama kitsch, huh?
I've got to sit on the fence. Sorry about that.
Febby O.K., senior editor for The Takeaway. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. It's Inauguration Day.
WNYC receives support from YIVO, presenting the Mad Jewish World of Al Jaffe, The Man Who Gave the World the Fold-In, and Snappy Answers to Stupid Questions, January 21st, 7 p.m. at 15 West 16th Street, 212-868-4444 or YIVO.org.
Thelonious Monk, Chopin, Steve Reich,
Laurie Anderson,
Palestrina,
Paul Robeson,
Don Byron,
Theo Blechman,
Mahalia Jackson,
Bill Klein,
Bernstein,
Arvo Pärt,
Vijay Iyer,
Philip Glass,
Bach. Embrace the music on Evening Music, every night on 93.9 FM WNYC.
The Leonard Lopate Show today will be a post-inauguration show after the inaugural address. Leonard and guests from his entire 50-state series will be breaking down the inauguration and what it means for tomorrow. Leonard Lopate after the inaugural address. It's the inauguration of Barack Obama on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. We're now less than an hour from the swearing-in. Millions are in D.C. for the event. Americans are watching everywhere around the country. Billions are watching around the world. Schools are setting up televisions for the teachable moment. The pomp and the ceremony has begun. President Bush, President-elect Obama, arriving at the scene now in a car that they took together from the White House. We will start to listen in momentarily on some of the music and other goings-on. We'll bring you all the official action once it begins. Michelle Obama in a hopeful yellow. Actually, Michelle Obama and Laura Bush coming into view now, both dressed in green. And we will bring you all the official action as it begins to unfold, as it is now beginning. Senator Dianne Feinstein will be hosting the ceremony. Starting at 11:30, Chief Justice John Roberts will administer the oath of office to the president-elect, so stay with us as our coverage continues. And joining me now again in our studio is Jabari Asim. He's the author of a brand-new book called What Obama Means. Jabari, wow, what a morning and what a spectacle to see Bush and Obama together at the White House and then motorcading over to the Capitol in the same car.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I also was thinking about what you were talking about earlier, how we don't pay enough attention to how magnificent an accomplishment it is to have a peaceful transfer of power as we do with every election. And it's wonderfully symbolized in seeing the two men together.
Now, we also have WNYC's Andrea Bernstein with us, who has a seat just 20 feet from where the swearing-in is going to take place. Andrea, I assume you can't see the Bushes or the Obamas yet, right? They haven't taken their places?
I regret them in front of the TV screen, so I can't see what's going on. But what I can see is leaning over the balustrade They've let all the senators in now. They've let all the members of the House of Representatives and all the governors. And leaning over the balustrade are a number of senators. I see Chris Dodd. I see John McCain. John Kerry was just there. And they are staring out over this view of the mall, which looks to be completely full all the way down to the Lincoln Memorial. They're letting in the Supreme Court now. And the parade route, which I can also see from this vantage point, also looks completely full. But that sight is riveting, all of these members of Congress, and that's what they're looking out at now.
Incredible. By the way, we have a raucous color dispute breaking out in our control room. I said that Laura Bush and Michelle Obama were wearing green, but apparently I'm looking at a monitor that needs a little bit of a color adjustment, and I'm told that it's really yellow and cream. And Jabari, that Michelle Obama has actually publicly embraced the color of yellow as something that's going to signify hope during this administration.
That hadn't occurred to me, but I buy it. Like you, I couldn't quite determine what exactly what color she was wearing, but yellow seems, I suppose, as appropriate as anything else she might choose.
I remember when yellow was the color, the official color of Corazon Aquino with the People Power movement in the Philippines.
That's right.
When she led the people there to overthrow peacefully the dictator Marcos. So that's at least one historical use of the color yellow to represent political hope. Andrea, can you see the members of the Supreme Court taking their places? Again, I'm looking at a monitor, so I don't know if I'm looking at what you're looking at, but maybe current and former, because I just saw Sandra Day O'Connor walking down a row, and Chief Justice Roberts, and I may have just gotten a glimpse of Clarence Thomas. Are you seeing this?
I cannot see them, but I can hear them being introduced because I'm about 20 feet down. I'm just underneath the podium where they're going to swear him in, so I can't see what is happening up on the dignitaries other than the people that are down in the front area, and I can actually see the podium because it's jutting out a little bit into the area where the Marine Corps band is playing.
Now, I understand that the president gets sworn in, and there goes the Marine Corps band. Let's listen for just a second. Of course, this is the Marine Corps band through a cell phone, so I think we won't stay with this very long. Kind of sounds like the Marine Corps band channeled through a 1940s newsreel.
Yes, and you know, Brian, it's really funny because this area that I'm in is actually a press section, and I'm not sure what the press did to be so loved by the radio and television gallery that they get these close seats. But even the reporters here are sort of a little giddy and happy, and I think everybody feels like this is quite a day in history, and here we are also part of it too, literally on the having a sort of, you know, just about front row seat.
How about the Fox News reporters, the Washington Times reporters, the New York Post reporters?
I haven't seen any of them. I mean, it's interesting because a lot of the press here is regional from and also from sort of smaller, more specialty press. So I haven't seen the Fox News reporters rejoicing. You know, I have to say that it has sort of been a big party down here.
And it's a party for America anytime a new president takes over, and it's a particular party for America. Jabari Asim, no matter what party you're with, your party affiliation, no matter who you voted for, no matter whether you think Obama's going to be a great president or a lousy president, because of the racial history.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the things that struck me watching the monitor in terms of party politics, they just showed John W. Rogers, who's the CEO of Ariel Capital Management in Chicago and a close friend and supporter of Barack Obama. In 1960, John W. Rogers' mother, Jewel LaFontaine, seconded the nomination of Richard Nixon for president at the Republican National Convention. So it's interesting to see the ways in which party politics have shifted somewhat over the years.
Have you ever attended an inauguration?
I never have.
All of America is attending this one, or so it seems. I can't remember the last time I heard of schools mounting televisions all over the country, stopping things. Certainly didn't happen in 2005, the second inauguration. It wouldn't tend to happen after a reelection. I don't think it happened in 2001 after Bush versus Gore went on until December. That certainly was not a moment of unity for the country, and I don't think it was a moment where everybody stopped to watch an inaugural address. This one certainly is.
Right. It seems, I guess, we're sort of united in the idea that this is one we cannot miss. And I guess in terms of African Americans and other Americans paying so much attention to this, I can't help but think that it's a very overt demonstration of our mutual investment in the grand American experiment. It's clear that we all have a stake in this and that we're all hopeful about what the outcome will be.
Members of the cabinet are now walking out of the Capitol building, outside to where the inauguration will take place. We saw the Interior Secretary nominee, Ken Salazar, and his wife, Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary nominee, and his wife walking out right now. Eric Holder, the Attorney General nominee, outside there now and waving to the crowd. By the way, the final word on fashion from our crack producer staff, which is always on the big story. Michelle Obama is wearing a sparkling gold sheath dress with gold sheath dress with matching coat by Cuban-born American designer Isabel Toledo on the day her husband will be inaugurated as president, we are told from the Associated Press. Barack Obama is wearing a red tie and white shirt with his suit this morning. I'm guessing the suit will be blue with the white shirt and the red tie. Toledo, by the way, who just a few years ago unsuccessfully tried to infuse more modern style into the venerable Anne Klein label, is considered among the more avant-garde U.S. designers. You write a lot about pop culture in your book, What Obama Means. You're familiar with Toledo style by any chance?
I have to admit that I've relied on the fashionista in my house, my 13-year-old daughter, who sort of briefed me on many of the designers that Michelle Obama favors. I'm wondering if Barack Obama is wearing another Hart Schaffner and Marx suit, which is the designer company he has favored throughout the campaign.
Some of the sequence of events to take place. It's now exactly 11:10. You can set your watch by it. In 2 minutes, the Biden family is to be announced and seated. Actually, I guess they're running a little behind because I don't think they have announced and seated the former presidents yet, as far as I could tell. So any minute now, they will announce and seat the former presidents of the United States. So that would be Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush. The Obama family will be announced and seated after the Biden family. John Kerry now walking out of the Capitol and taking a seat. Mrs. Bush and Mrs. Cheney will be announced together and seated. Then Mrs. Obama and Joe Biden's wife, Dr. Biden, announced and seated. Then President Bush and Vice President Cheney. Then Vice President-elect Biden. And finally, President-elect Barack Obama, all leading up to 11:30 when Senator Dianne Feinstein, as the chair of the inaugural committee, will deliver opening remarks. Now let's listen to the announcements as the former vice presidents, maybe you heard that in the background, Quayle, Mondale, Gore, just announced. Walking out together. Andrea Bernstein, 20 feet from the podium, what can you see?
I can now see Joe Lieberman has come over to take a look at the crowd. He's wearing a blue baseball hat that says UConn. Senator Dodd is still there.
That's not Y-U-K-O-N, that's U-C-O-N-N.
UConn. And I believe the national colors are now coming. The U.S. Marine Band is now standing.
Getting ready to play?
Thank you.
And as the band plays, a color guard with a line of flags marching down the aisle toward the podium.
Ladies and gentlemen, please be seated.
The crowd did stand to hear the music, to hear the Marine Band. By the way, at 11:30, if you're near a computer, we will be bringing you live video of the ceremony on our website. Our online crew continues to blog and post pictures on our website as well. We have so many reporters down in D.C. blogging and shooting photos. Go to WNYC.org for all the latest information on that. Barbara Bush and George H.W. Bush. George H.W. Bush not walking so easily right now. A little bit side to side. Looks like he's wearing a purple scarf. But they are now entering. Barbara wearing a darker purple scarf. WNYC's Andrea Bernstein. Can you see the elder Bushes? They may not be outside yet. We can hear George asking, where do we go? But it looks like they're about to exit. And behind them, George and Rosalind Carter. And, of course, I left out Carter earlier when mentioning the living ex-presidents, all of whom get invited to every inauguration. Carter and H.W. Bush and Clinton, Jimmy Carter, with Rosalind, and so I expect we'll be seeing Bill Clinton momentarily, perhaps with the future Secretary of State. Andrea, the confirmation vote for Hillary Clinton could take place as early as this afternoon, I've heard. Are they going to get down to business that much?
Well, it depends. There's a procedural issue they need to resolve. They have one senator objecting to her confirmation, and they can't just do it by unanimous vote. So it may not happen until tomorrow, Senator Reid has said today. But we'll have to see. I mean, it's hard to imagine anybody really wants to do any business today. And I think that if there's an issue that people have to start coming to the floor and spending time in the Senate, that's not what senators want to be doing today. They want to be going to balls and having a good time and not having procedural votes. So it may actually wait until tomorrow until it happens. By the way, I wanted to mention that I ran into Bill Burton yesterday, who was Barack Obama's campaign press secretary and is going to work in the White House. I just happened to run into him at a coffee shop in Washington.
Whoops, I think we've lost Andrea for the moment. Meanwhile, President and Mrs. Clinton are now emerging from the Capitol onto the podium. Bill Clinton also wearing a yellow scarf, perhaps coordinated with the Obamas. We'll see if that takes hold in the population at large as an Obama color, as a color of hope for the 21st century. But interesting, Jabari Asim, author of What Obama Means for Our Culture, Our Politics, Our Future, a book just coming out today. Interesting that one senator is deciding to hold up the confirmation by unanimous consent of Hillary Clinton. I believe that senator is Republican David Vitter of Louisiana, and that he also voted no as the only no vote in committee, the Foreign Affairs Committee. Andrea, is it David Vitter from Louisiana who is that objector to the unanimous consent motion for Hillary Clinton?
That is my understanding, although the details, I am not sure of all of the details. But before my cell phone line dropped, and we as a trade-off for privilege of being this close, we are on a cell phone here, which is why the audio dropped out before. But the was telling about the White House press staff and how they're supposed to go down to the White House after this in a van. He wasn't sure if that would be possible, and it certainly looks like it's going to be difficult to go anywhere in Washington after this. But he certainly had a look in his face as sort of a deer in the headlights, like, oh, my God, tomorrow I am going to be in charge in the White House. So I think that there must be quite a few people who sort of, you know, can't quite believe that this transformation is happening, even though obviously it is what they have worked for and have hoped for.
Hugs all around now between the Clintons and the Bushes, the former President Bush and Bill Clinton and their wives. I'm told now that it's Senator John Cornyn of Texas who is the no vote. And Todd Zwillick from Capital News Connection also joins us right now, also from the inaugural site. Todd, what can you see from where you are right now?
Well, I've got a view of pretty much the entire House and the Senate, looking down into the stadium seating that you can probably see in your studio. If you know 535 members of the Congress, you could name them all, nearly all of them, from where I'm sitting. I can see Al Gore and Tipper Gore. And directly across from me, the Supreme Court, including, interestingly, former Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, is along with the other members of the court, Antonin Scalia in the front row, and Chief Justice John Roberts. Everyone has just stood up. I couldn't hear who was announced on the way in.
Todd, you know about this confirmation process for Senator Clinton. Why is Senator John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, holding up a unanimous consent vote?
That's not clear unless he wants to. Sometimes senators will do that if they just want to have a floor debate or a question of timing. He may want to hold up that process in order to bring another issue to light or simply to delay the vote for a week or two. It's not clear at this point whether he has a problem with her as a candidate. But keep in mind, one senator can delay proceedings in the Senate, but he can't stop it. I think it's still pretty clear that unless if you can imagine us finding out something about Hillary Clinton and her life that we don't already know, I would be surprised. they do say in Washington, and they're right, she's probably one of, if not the most vetted person in Washington, D.C. There's not much about her that we don't already know. I think if she were not confirmed as Secretary of State, it would be a huge, huge shock to everyone. Cornyn can slow it down. He can't stop it.
I'm sure he's only going to slow it down a little, even if he chooses to do so. I think the issue is just how much dissociation they're going to want with the donors to the Clinton Foundation, dissociation as opposed to disclosure.
Correct. That may be an issue. They may want to take some time and publicize that a little more. I can't tell you what his motivation is. Senators use their prerogatives for all sorts of reasons, but it's certainly a slowing down tactic at this point.
Now, Todd, can you see former President George H.W. Bush and his wife, Barbara Bush? I described earlier how they were walking down a hallway in the Capitol building, ready to emerge, and now they're actually outside walking down some steps. Can you see that?
I see him now. Yes, just as you finished talking, Brian, he stepped into view. I see him now walking down the aisle. Looks like he's just shaking hands with Al Gore, and he's walking. Looks like he's about to go and walk and find his seat in the same row next to President Jimmy Carter and former First Lady Barbara Bush. Looks like she's having a wave and a little bit of a chat with President Carter.
And I think Al Gore and Rahm Emanuel, the new chief of staff, just greeted former President Bush.
Correct. And from my vantage point, I believe a quick handshake between H.W. Bush and Dan Quayle, if I'm not mistaken, although I'm a little far away.
Now the crowd is cheering. Why is that? Oh, that's the emergence of Bill and Hillary, yes?
Let me stand up for 1 second and look.
I have the advantage of a television monitor.
You do. And I'm off to the side. It is. It's the emergence of President Bill Clinton and Senator Secretary of State designee nominee Hillary Rodham Clinton coming out into the stadium seating now.
How about that yellow scarf of Bill Clinton? Any meaning to that? As far as you know, we're hearing that yellow might be designated the color of hope by Michelle Obama. She's wearing yellow. Yellow and cream, gold and cream. We see Bill Clinton with a yellow scarf. Just wondering if there's any coordination there.
I don't know. I see that Senator Clinton has a purple coat. What do you think about that?
Now I see somebody.
And I will add, as long as we're on the topic,
yes?
Senator Clinton does have a purple coat, and former President Bush, H.W. Bush, looks like he has a purple scarf, so maybe they're on the same page for some reason.
There you go. And the Bush twins coming down.
Yep, there they
the
are, Jenna and
now.
Barbara. Jenna and Barbara with young gentlemen in tow, husbands apparently.
Twin purple scarves to continue the aesthetic. And we just got a shot of somebody inside the Capitol walking toward the outside, not yet outside, carrying what was probably the Lincoln Bible. Is that what the swearing-in will take place on?
Yes. President-elect Barack Obama is expected to step to the swearing-in with Chief Justice John Roberts carrying the Lincoln Bible. He requested it, was granted it. What I understood was, had there been inclement weather conditions, they could have pulled the Lincoln Bible back from him. The curators have authority. They don't want it to be damaged, of course. Today's it's a cold day, but it's nice and sunny, so not a problem. But had it been high winds or rain or sleet, they could have asked him to use, well, some other Bible, I suppose, but it's going to be the Lincoln Bible for him, and he will be using it.
Jabari Asim, I don't know if you got the glimpse of the Bible that I did on the TV monitor, but that is one huge Bible. It looked more like the OED, well, the Oxford English Dictionary.
I didn't see it, but I had heard an earlier news account, and I don't know if it's accurate, is that Obama is the first president in quite some time to choose the Lincoln Bible for his swearing in.
That's right.
Well, Brian, keep an eye on the Bible that Joe Biden uses. I got an up close look at it the day he was sworn into the Senate yet again before he resigned in order to become vice president today. And his aide in a press gaggle had a gigantic Bible. And I turned and I said, "Is that Biden's Bible?" He said, "Yep, it's a family Bible. He's been sworn in with it for every time, you know, every Senate swearing in since he came to the Senate in 1972, when he was just 30 years old." I would assume if that's the Bible he's used for being sworn into the Senate all these many years, that he would use it today. And that's a big one. It's gigantic. That's the Biden family Bible.
Jabari Asim, what are you hoping to hear in the inaugural address?
Well, something poetic that kind of ties in these various moments of history, some of which we're seeing as we watch. I noticed when President Jimmy Carter stepped onto the platform, he shook hands with Martin Luther King III. And to me, that was an example of the little poetic moments that we're bearing witness to. And I hope that the speech somehow incorporates a lot of that.
Brian, I think we're waiting for Vice President-elect Joe Biden and his wife, Dr. Jill Biden, to emerge. The dais has fallen pretty still, and I believe they're next in the program.
And I just saw Laura Bush, and Lynn Cheney, but not out on the platform yet. They are in motion, walking together in the Capitol, heading toward the platform. And I guess they're running a little bit late because
it might be.
They have not yet announced the Biden family or seated the Biden family, have they?
No, they have not, but they may be running a little late, but as long as that oath is taken by 12 noon, you're all right by the Constitution. The president's term ends at 12 noon on January 20th, so you want to have the next one in place by then.
Robinson and the daughters of the president-elect, Malia Obama and Sasha Obama, accompanied by Assistant Secretary of the Senate, Sheila Dwyer.
We heard that.
You heard that cheer go up in the announcement. Okay. Secretary of the Senate, Sheila Dwyer, leading out Barack
Sasha
and Michelle Obama's two girls.
Yes. Sasha and Malia.
And Michelle Obama. Sasha and Malia. Michelle Obama.
That's
in a red scarf, incidentally.
That's Grandma.
That's Grandma.
That's Grandma.
I am a little far away.
That's Michelle's mom.
Michelle's mom.
Red and yellow go well together. There is red decoration around, or forming an arch around the door to the Capitol with some blue sheeting underneath it. So red and blue. No white in that particular scene, but you know where they're going.
and the wife of the Vice President, Mrs. Lynn Cheney, accompanied by Secretary Chow, Mrs. Bennett, Mrs. Boehner, and Republican Staff Director of the U.S. Senate Committee on Rules and Administration, Mary Suit Jones.
Hey, everybody.
So you may have heard that. Here comes the First Lady. Along with Mrs. Cheney, outgoing Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao, who is also the wife of Senate Minority Leader, Republican Leader Mitch McConnell.
Jabari Yassin, author of What Obama Means. I know you got to run. Give us one last thought. How are you feeling?
Well, it's really hard to describe. It's a real challenge for those of us who make our living slinging words together. But it's a combination of, I guess, being really thrilled, but also sort of holding our breath until the actual swearing-in takes place. And there'll be an exhalation, a release, followed by exaltation, I would say.
I would say. And then the work begins.
And then the work begins.
Then it's on to banking bailouts. Wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
A very crowded agenda indeed.
Reforming health care. And you notice nobody's saying, gosh, you're the first black president, when it gets down to brass tacks, at least not yet, right? They're saying, what can you do to bail out the banking system? Why not?
It would be nice to have a moment of recognition of that, but time waits for no one, including the first African-American president.
Funny enough, the crisis, I think, has really, and maybe it's a good thing, taken any focus at all off his race, except in the symbolic sense, would you say?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because the crisis so dramatically affects all of us, regardless of our background, and it has a way of uniting us in ways perhaps that we didn't even anticipate.
Jabari Yassin, author of the brand new book, What Obama Means for Our Culture, Our Politics, Our Future, poetically released on this day. Thank you for being with us so much today.
Thank you for having me.
As the crowd chants...
Brian, part of the...
Obama. Obama. Todd, go ahead. Todd Zwillick on the scene.
You hear them chanting Obama. There's a cheer peeling across back the crowd, and part of the cheer you just heard was a wave from Oprah Winfrey back in the seating area, and she attracted a little bit of attention from onlookers. She stood up and gave a wave.
Michelle Obama now walking down the steps, apparently to be the next one out. And I'm sure you will hear the crowd, the loudest that we've heard it yet, when she appears. All those millions of people way back on the Mall, Todd, do they have monitors?
There are, I think, 24 or 26 Jumbotron screen, Gigantor screen TVs going from the Mall all the way back to the Lincoln Memorial. So people as far back as 2 miles from here. I think the entire length of the Mall from the West Front to the Lincoln Memorial is about 2.2 miles, and there are screens all the way back. There are people all the way back, and so they're watching screens, and I've been getting emails on the BlackBerry from friends and acquaintances and reporters all down the Mall, and the crowds are watching the Jumbotrons, and there are speakers all up and down the Mall as well for spectators.
2 dozen Jumbotrons, wow. Mrs. Biden and Mrs. Obama walking together. And now we're seeing Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader, along with John Boehner, the House Minority Leader, walking together, still inside the Capitol, heading toward the outside. I think that cheer is for Mrs. Obama, Mrs. Biden. Let's listen.
Secretary of the Senate, Nancy Erickson, the Clerk of the House of Representatives, Lorianne Miller, Mr. Blum, Mr. Pelosi, and Mrs. Reed.
And inside, right behind the minority leaders of the House and Senate, is President Bush walking by himself. So many of the others walking two by two, walking in pairs. Boehner and McConnell, Mrs. Biden and Mrs. Obama, the Clintons, but George W. Bush walking on his own, at least for right now. down steps toward the outside. Michelle Obama was the source of that big cheer that you heard. It wasn't those others who were announced. Michelle Obama emerged into public view at that same time.
She's just greeted Senator Hillary Clinton and walked by her. A nod to First Lady Laura Bush.
Interesting what will happen next for George W. Bush. I guess he'll just recede from the public limelight for a while, huh? He says he wants to write a book.
He said last week in his final news conference that he's going to move out of the Klieg lights. And he certainly will. Ladies, Vice
President Jill Biden. Well, he became pretty invisible in the last weeks of his presidency, except for a few announcements with respect to the Gaza crisis. I believe they just announced Joe Biden, or was that somebody just talking about Joe Biden?
That might have been some background chatter on the crowded media risers here that you heard.
And again, according to the official schedule, and things are taking place in their proper sequence just a little bit later than officially anticipated. Mrs. Obama and Dr. Biden, that's Joe Biden's wife, will be announced and seated together, because we did hear Mrs. Bush and Mrs. Cheney announced and seated, I believe. Let's listen. No announcement yet. And then President Bush and Vice President Cheney. Oh, that's why President Bush was walking by himself, because I think Vice President Cheney had an accident and is a wheelchair, and so probably was not coming down because they were walking down steps. What can you tell us about that, Todd?
Pulled a muscle in his back, apparently, according to reports yesterday, apparently while moving. Who knew that the vice president moves his own furniture, but apparently pulled a muscle, so he'll be appearing today in a wheelchair. Not a life-threatening injury, but probably not the television image that an outgoing vice president would want to have, but Dick Cheney has shown little concern for the image the television image. He's usually more concerned with policy and nuts and bolts, so I doubt his ego will be damaged too much by that.
Our web video stream is now up at WNYC.org. If you want to watch this all on your computer, WNYC.org, web video, while you're listening to us.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, the Honorable George Walker Bush, and the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney, accompanied by Senate Republican Leader Senator Mitch McConnell, Senator Robert Bennett, House Republican Leader Representative John Boehner, and Secretary for the Minority David Chiappa.
I saw you up there.
Well, Brian, you heard the announcement. Here comes the President. All of the members of Congress on their feet for the president, as is custom and protocol when the president enters a room. It's customary to stand. And they've all done so with some polite applause, muted applause. No one in the crowd is standing for the president, but they wouldn't be expected to. They're not in his immediate sphere.
And no matter what one may think of the policies and actions of George W. Bush, he was the president of the United States for 8 years, and in a very difficult 8 years. 9/11 happening just months into his administration.
The president sharing a joke with Justice Antonin Scalia.
Wonder what kind of a joke Bush and Scalia would be making at a moment like this.
It's unclear, but he's apparently just shared one with Michelle Obama as well. He said something to her, and she had a chuckle. From my vantage point, the president appears to be in good spirits. He's
still
waving to various...
Yes, and he's still laughing.
He's laughing. You
laughing
can see him
continuously.
Yep, waving to members of Congress. Here comes the vice president in a wheelchair, because of his back injury. moved up to the front.
We mentioned Michelle's mother before, by the way. It's Marion Robinson. Didn't have the name at the time. But she's with the girls right now. And I gather she's... Well, let's go to the podium.
The Vice President-elect, inaugural coordinator for the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, Jennifer Griffith. Senate Deputy Sergeant-at-Arms, Drew Willison. House Deputy Sergeant-at-Arms, Carrie Hanley. Senate Majority Leader, Senator Harry Reid. House Majority Leader, Representative Steny Hoyer.
And now on our TV monitors, we're getting our first glimpse of Barack Obama in the hallway of the Capitol, looking very solemn but with a twinkle in his eye. And a bit of a smile on his face. Serious, but with a bit of a smile, kind of like that official portrait, if you saw it, Todd. The official photograph. Official photograph, I should say, that will be hanging in all the federal office buildings.
That cheer appears to be, that cheer you hear, Brian, if you can hear it, appears to be for Joe Biden.
The gloveless Joe Biden on the 30-degree day. Leaning back as he exited the Capitol and was greeted by such a rousing cheer from the crowd. Leaning back, almost a little bit surprised, but beaming and walking down the steps.
Joe Biden greeting former Vice President Al Gore, a kiss on the cheek for Tipper.
And Obama himself with the most curious expression on his face. I don't even think I have the words for the unsuppressible smile and yet the look of solemnity that somehow managed to be combined into the same face right now. He's clearly very proud as well as very humbled.
Harry Reid and Steny Hoyer going back to the back of the dais. Looks like they're going to escort the president-elect into the arena.
You can hear the buzz of anticipation. I think the crowd knows the rough sequence of events, and they realize who's already out there and the limited options for who has yet to emerge.
There's no one left, is there?
It's just getting louder and louder. President Bush just received his last hail to the chief from the U.S. Marine Band. Obama will not get one upon his announcement because he is not yet President of the United States. Chants of Obama, Obama. Rippling through the crowd. DC police, you told us earlier, Todd, don't make crowd estimates anymore. But that crowd I can see on the television stretches all the way from the Capitol to the Washington Monument.
And it will be interesting to see what it comes out to in the final analysis, because I don't think anybody really knows how many people fit between the Capitol and the Washington Monument.
Staff Director for the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, Howard Gantman. The Senate Sergeant-at-Arms, Terrence W. Gaynor. The House Sergeant-at-Arms, Wilson Livinggood. Chairman of the Joint Congressional Committee on Inaugural Ceremonies, Senator Dianne Feinstein. Senator Robert Bennett. The Speaker of the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi. Senate Majority Leader, Senator Harry Reid. House Majority Leader, Representative Steny Hoyer. House Republican Leader, Representative John Boehner.
I still want to know what all those jokes were that George Bush was telling.
So coming up now, Senator Dianne Feinstein, who's
as outgoing chairman of the Senate Rules Committee, doubles as chairman of the Joint Congressional Committee for the inauguration, along with Senator Robert Bennett of Utah, Republican, who's the outgoing ranking member on the Rules Committee.
So Senator Feinstein will actually preside here over these next few minutes, won't she?
She will, and she'll also have a brief set of remarks, ostensibly in front of the largest crowd even she has ever addressed.
Dianne Feinstein, Democrat from California.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President-elect of the United States, Barack H. Obama.
See the president-elect?
I can't. Oh, he's just come into view. Yes, I can. Greeting. Walk past Rahm Emanuel. Apparently they've spent enough time together lately. They don't need to spend any time. President-elect making his way rather quickly up the aisle, much in the same way that he will in his first State of the Union address when members of Congress are greeted on the way to the podium. A hug. Hug with both of his daughters and his wife. And now a quick word with Joe Biden. Well, now the president-elect is making his way back up the other aisle. Greeted the First Lady. A handshake with former Presidents Clinton and H.W. Bush. And the Vice President is taking his seat along with the rest of the crowd.
Senator Dianne Feinstein about to preside.